Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Jugo, what was that word from before?
We are good. You're not saying it.
Agajugo, JoJo's.
JoJo's.
Agajugojo.
My Twitter display name was It Was Me, Austin. And half my Twitter followers thought it was a
wrestling. Is it wrestling? Is it JoJo? Anime? But the thing is, it's both. They're the same.
They're extremely the same thing. Are we on the internet?
Agajugojo.
It Was Me is a reference to, like, the two It Was Me, Austin.
Two,
It Was Me, Austin. And one is It Was Me, Austin.
Except that one's actually, But It Was Me, Dio. And it's like, you thought JoJo would be your first kiss, but it was me, Dio.
It was me, Dio.
Who's like, he's like a vampire, but also like he can make time stop.
Okay.
JoJo's wild.
That does sound a little weird.
Yep.
Agajugojo.
Funny thing is, if that plot had gone a different way,
Stone
Cold could have been running WWE right now.
Yeah,
right?
It could have been that lady's first kiss.
Yeah.
Also, Vince McMahon could have been a vampire. All that stuff
is true. I'm not convinced he's not.
Could have?
Yeah, maybe he is.
Come on.
True.
I saw that man survive.
How do I make this computer not turn off? Power options. High performance. That's me.
Search in the corner for. Oh.
It's on never already. We're not plugged in, right? Oh, we are plugged in. We're plugged in. I turn this to never.
Yeah.
We know how the internet works. Also, computers.
Wow.
Are we still unfocused? No, we're not
we're
on
in focus.
Focus.
Oh, wait, so we're being streamed now.
We're on the internet.
Okay. I just made a tweet.
That's not what we've been over this.
Oh, I just made a
tweet.
I just quoted.
You
quoted
or you tweeted? You make up your mind.
I don't like. Stop saying tweeted.
You tweet, but you get quoted.
I like it the other
tweet
way.
Tweet is.
You get
tweeted.
Like, oh, I woke up this morning. Oh, man, I got tweeted.
It's better to be tweeted than tweeted.
I look over to my left. Oh, I got quoted last night.
Wait, so is that someone quote tweets you or something? Or tweets you?
That's
going to
be the vernacular.
I don't think there's an answer to what it is. I'm Austin Walker. What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint.
The internet's bad.
It's me, Austin!
That's not... It was me all...
And we're joined by Ethel Merman.
Like, you can't... She can't say it out loud.
Oh, God.
It's day two of E3.
Is it?
Day five
wait,
for
how
us.
Is that possible?
Yeah, don't say that.
You're right. It's day. What do you
six.
Call it? Do you count EA Play as day one?
Yes.
Yes.
It's day five.
It's day five.
Yeah.
It's
Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Is that how days work?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. It's day five of E3.
You're not confident about it, but she
I've
said
seen
it's true.
Sábado, domingo, lunes, martes, miércoles.
Okay.
Do it in another language.
Nope.
Japanese. Come on.
No, I don't know it. I don't know the days in Japanese.
Right, yeah. Right. We saw some games today. We're back. Waypoint is back. Coming to you live from a different part of this weird...
You don't even know where we are. Don't even tell them. You'll never know.
There's a red door right there that scares me.
Yeah.
A little bit. Where should we start today? Oh, we should start with I Saw Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Well,
yes.
Did you...
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah, let's...
Did
okay.
you...
I saw... Okay.
What'd you see, Austin?
I saw Michelle Ancel.
That's not Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I saw Gabriella, whose last name I forget, who was like the story lead on the game or kind of the story designer on
the
game.
She came out also with Michelle on stage, right?
I believe so, yes. I saw a couple other core people of the team. They walked me through a bunch of concept art that was on the walls. They kind of tried to recreate. They're like, we want to recreate this room that we have in France, where it's like we've been slowly over the course of years putting concept art up. You have to take those glasses off.
If we put up enough concept art, it becomes me.
I hate this. And...
Oh, wait. We'll only take the glasses off if you call us senpai.
Senpai. Take your fucking glasses off.
Give me another term.
Sensei. Patrick
okay.
Sensei. Patrick Sensei.
Okay, keep going.
Put them back on.
So
I don't want to see it.
After everything I've heard about... This
so I did see.
I want to
clear.
Know. I
well, the thing that's weird is I heard from somebody else a pitch for this game, But then they did not give me that thing. In fact, I asked questions about it.
I was with you when
that
happened.
Yeah, that is not what... Okay. Hmm. Okay, so let's not walk through what they told me, and then we'll talk about what somebody else told us.
Yeah,
and
okay.
How that's wrong.
Yep, okay.
So what they told me was, this is going to be an action-adventure with some RPG mechanics progression. You're going to have a spaceship. You're going to recruit crew to your spaceship by doing missions in the world. You're going to do things like bust the hybrid people who are like half animal, half human out of slave ships. You're going to like go to weird temples. You're going to do all the stuff that you imagine is happening in an action-adventure, 3D action-adventure game.
Right.
Slash RP with some RPG elements. Yeah. You're going to take photos of the world, like as in Beyond Good and Evil 2, or Beyond Good and Evil 1.
But you're not Jade.
You're not. It's a prequel.
Right.
It takes place in a different star system. Okay. It takes place...
Is Jade in it?
Jade's parents are probably going to be in it.
Okay, that's so it's early enough that, like, oh, okay, all right.
I believe, that's what my guess is. Mm-hmm. It's like before, they kind of talked about how they wanted the world to be less fantastical. Like, so in Beyond Good and Evil 1, hybrids exist in the world. They never talk about hybrids. They never say, like, why are there hybrids in this world?
Oh, okay.
And this is like, oh, because the corporations needed slave labor. Done, obviously. So they used CRISPR to build... half human, half people. If you don't know what CRISPR is, look it up. It's like weird DNA tech that's hot right now. Gene tech. Now all this is the pitch that I'm giving you the pitch that you may have already been able to intuit from the trailer, which is like, oh, okay, it's an action adventure, blah, blah, blah. What they didn't pitch you is they build a universe using a combination of authored content and procedural generation. Now, most of it's going to take place in a single solar system or a couple of solar systems.
Okay.
Limited number. But the planets are big. There are cities that are massive in scale that were a combination of procedurally generated and handcrafted.
Okay.
There will be a number of cities on the planet that are connected by huge highways.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of pitch the game as existing on three levels or three scales. From... you know, you're you make your own character. First of all, there's not an authored character. You make your own character. Mm-hmm. You recruit some of the characters that you see in the trailer. And, you know, the small scale, that's like I'm getting noodles at a noodle shop with one of those NPCs. I'm taking a photo that I took to one of the world's NPCs and saying, what do you recognize in this photo? Or, like, where can I find this man? Or how do I get into this building? And an NPC, all the NPCs will know stuff about the world. All the city is full of NPCs. It's very ambitious. I don't understand. Then the higher level is the city level. That is like you're racing through the city streets and like on a heist or whatever. And the higher level is the planet level where you're running, you're getting stuck in the desert because you ran out of fuel. Mm-hmm. The highest level is then you're in space. You're on a mothership in space and it's filled with your crew and you're busting people out of asteroid prisons and you're doing all the stuff. Now that stuff will all be designed. None of that will be proc gen, right? Like that's the thing to understand. The way I had to wrap my head around this game was, it took me a bit. But... this is the best and most realistic and skeptical pitch I can make is, imagine that you had, and this is me working, this is me filtering what they told me into something that sounds like a more coherent pitch.
Mm-hmm.
What if you took the regular levels that you've played in a Beyond Good and Evil or in a character action game?
Okay.
Or in an open world action game or a kind of a prestige Naughty Dog style, whatever you want to think about, and placed them in a larger open world. And the thing that really made it click for me is, at one point, I was seeing this demo with Marty Silva from IGN,
mm-hmm.
and we were both kind of like, what the fuck are you doing, right? At one point, Marty straight up said, like, why do you hate yourselves? This is the weirdest way to do this. This is the hardest way to do this, because they went in and they started with zero lines of code. This is on a new engine. This is on an engine they've built from the ground up that they've been working on for 3 years. That is like all about trying to get this sense of scale. And we were both like, why would you do this? Mario Odyssey is trying to do a bunch of different places. And they just, you go to a bunch of different places that are self-contained. Why do this? And they said, well, we wanted to make a game that's about the journey. And we wanted to make a game about speed and scale. And so what they showed us was like, yeah, the city's really big. But guess what? In this ship, we can go anywhere from 10 kilometers an hour to 20,000 kilometers an hour. Where you're just speeding over it. And in that moment, I realized that the notion was that they want to make a world that is texture to authored sequences. So you want the notion of, like, I'm doing a heist, and I bust out the window of the heist, and I get, you know, chased through, like, the Fifth Element style, cyberpunk city streets with flying cars all over the place. It takes a lot to build that city.
Yeah.
And to organically do it. Or it ends up being like a Ratchet and Clank thing where, like, okay, you're not really exploring it. You're not really trying to escape through city streets. you're just going down a path, right? And they're like, no, we wanted to make it so that you could do the actual escape and then get to your spaceship that's on the roof somewhere and then fly off into space. And so they did that. And it doesn't matter that there's nothing in a lot of those buildings. Those buildings are basically building-shaped mountains or something, right? Yeah. Or some of those buildings will have stuff in them. It's absurd. And I'm really glad they didn't make that pitch to the public with their trailer, because we would be immediately in a No Man's Sky situation.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, bring your skepticism.
I already feel in a No Man's Sky situation.
Well, there's another
half of this. I call bullshit on all of that.
There's another... I call bullshit on it being the way I would do it. I would not build a... planets orbit planets in this game. They built the world of there's a day-night cycle that
I'm just saying,
just
show me.
They showed me this.
I know, but that's
I
not
know,
showing
I know,
me.
I know. But what I'm saying is, they set out to do it this way from the beginning.
Okay.
It's not It's not like they took. It's not like they took.
But why talk about that before you can say here
well,
it is?
Because what they're doing is open development. When they have that thing that says, "Hey, come join us, be a space monkey for us,
right.
Help us develop this game." What they mean is, you can become. I don't know they have not figured out what the way to become part of that is. I don't know if there's going to be a money thing. I don't know if it's just you sign up and you become a beta backer. Or not a beta backer, they're calling them prototypes, a prototype level backer, where they will straight up say all right, here is a monkey character in our open world. Tell us what you think of the animation. Here is a new ship design. What do you think of these ship designs? Every step of the way, it's going to be super transparent to where here's just a new collection of buildings for you to look at. Here's just a punching model. Here's what it looks like to punch now. And so in some ways, it's the anti-No Man's Sky. Where in No Man's Sky, they created hyper-crafted, very carefully designed trailers that presented an idealized version of that game.
Sure.
Most of what was in those trailers ended up in the main game, but were spread out into tiny little bits that never cohered to present the effect of the trailer.
Right.
And it was radio silence between those very handcrafted trailers.
Right.
Here, what they're saying is, you're right, this sounds ridiculous. Help us do it. Watch us do it. If we fall apart, you're going to see us falling apart. And I respect that, and also wonder how I am very skeptical.
I don't know.
I am going to live stream my decision to take this steamship across the Panamanian Isthmus.
Right.
And we're all going to be part of this journey together. And we're going to see how this goes. This
all sounds bad. None of this sounds good.
It sounds bad to us, but I think it's probably exciting. It's probably exciting for a lot of fans out there.
I think it's really exciting for that team. And here's the case I'm going to make. That team has made really good games. That game has just come off with two really strong Rayman games, which are literally...
2D platformers.
Right, which are literally
the
opposite.
You better...
No, but listen. And also,
Yamagami was one of my favorite games.
They tried to make this game in 2007, they said.
The leaked footage.
And you know why they killed it? Because it was bad. Because what they wanted to do, this is what they pitched us, was we wanted to make a game that had a sense of scale, that had a sense of place.
The technology wasn't there yet.
It wasn't just the technology wasn't there yet. It's we wrote a story, and then we tried to make that story into a game. We tried to do the thing that people in games never do, which is go story first. And it fell apart because the tech wasn't there, because we weren't good enough at it. And it just didn't, it wasn't going to come together. I'd rather them, I really said to Marty on the way out, was I'll take 10 No Man's Skies over a third Rayman game that's pretty good.
Sure.
So, or 10 Terra, this could all fall apart.
I think.
I'd rather them get that blank check or get the ability to develop an engine from the ground up for 3 years and show me some dope concept art and who knows. But I'm not saying give them money. I'm saying I'd rather the world have this in it than not.
I'm having two really divided reactions here. One is that this does sound ridiculously unworkable. It is the Fitzcarraldo Apocalypse Now type situation. I mean, and I am excited to hear that someone's swinging for those fences. Mm-hmm. This, man, imagine if this connects. Imagine if they really get under that and nail it. This is amazing. But then the other thing that I remember is that Beyond Good and Evil isn't a ridiculously big, ambitious, sweeping game.
Nope.
Beyond Good and Evil is a handful of really sharply drawn characters and settings.
Yep.
And sort of taking Zelda-ish mechanics and letting you play through that.
Yep.
And so when I thought boy, I would love to do that again, what I wasn't thinking was, I wish there was an entire world inside that bar that played that sweet-ass propaganda song.
And also another world above that world.
Yeah.
And another world above that world.
Yeah, like they zoomed out to be like, oh, here's the gas giant of the rings that you're rotating around right now, and it has two other moons you could go visit.
I don't even remember there being like that much like interstellar travel.
Their whole thing, right, because you were only on one planet, right?
Yeah, and so like it's kind of like, this sounds really cool. It also no longer sounds like Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Like, right. It sounds like Star Citizen. You know what? I don't want that.
It feels like, so it's a team of 15 people, they said.
Oh, well, that's tiny. Even more encouraging.
And it is... when I talked to them about it, there was a sense that they were bored of other stuff. This is a group of people who shipped a bunch of games and who didn't want to ship another game like the sorts of games that they've been shipping. And I'm not here to be like, I'm not here to be like, yo.
It's kind of like a middle yo.
It's going to be a yo.
Yo.
I just badly want to know the internal politics of Ubi.
Me too.
That led to like, there's all those Rayman games where it was like, all right, Michel, once more onto the breach, and then maybe this time. And then somehow he does swing this internal battle where he's like, all right, I want to make this game, but here's what it's going to be now.
Right. So one of my thoughts on this is like, this is a tech team that is building a new engine from the ground up. This could be a disaster. This could never ship. Or it could be Fortnite, which is like, it ships in 7 years, but it's the thing that develops the engine for the next generation of Ubisoft, open world, ridiculous games. Because I bet... So here's one of the things that they showed happening, right? That I could see used in a much smaller, more focused game. At one point in real time, they just started changing huge size... huge craters that you could stand in. There's huge, massive size. And it's like, oh, this is happening in real time, and according to what they're saying, who knows, it's very efficient. The engine has been designed to do huge, real-time geographic changes that are totally just doable in the middle of a mission, in the middle of a gunfight, in the middle of whatever. Maybe Beyond Good and Evil 2 never ships. But I bet you that tech eventually filters down into a Tom Clancy game where you're running through a city and the city starts blowing up. Mm-hmm. And the geometry changes and the earthquake happens and suddenly there's a huge underground tunnel. I don't know why that team needed to go public with this outside of a morale boost, or maybe they really needed a morale boost. I don't know.
That's also, maybe they'll be asking for help sooner than we think.
No, I think that'll be this year. I think they're going to ask for help this year, start showing those prototypes, and it's not a game. I want to be super clear. What they're showing so far is spaceships flying around, and then you get out of that big spaceship. The big spaceship opens up, and there's a little spaceship. And you fly out of that little spaceship, and there's a point in the demo where they just, like, he wanted to hop into, like, the person-sized mode, which is like a little monkey with a jetpack, and he did that and hopped out of the ship and then realized that he parked his ship vertically, and that it would be hard to get back into the ship. And so... I don't know, but don't expect it to be a focused, polished game anytime soon. I don't think, unless it's the biggest turnaround we've ever seen in gaming. Unless that goes from a studio. This is Ubisoft. They don't ship a game without 600 people touching it. And this is a team of 15. Like, it's weird. Yeah. Is this not what you wanted? Were you a big fan?
Yeah, this is not what I wanted.
What did you want?
Like, what you would expect from Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah.
Just like another one of those games.
So, the thing that I heard from somebody else today was like, oh, the people are going to design the world.
And
that's not happening. I want to be clear. That is not. We heard that from another source. And I was like, wait, so are people going to like make stuff for the game? Are they going to mod? Like, are they going to create spaces? And they were like, that would be the most extreme version of what we're talking about. Probably it would be cool, but that's not like goal.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else is being reported about that, but in my experience with this, my demo, they were like, nah.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see. I'm sorry.
Godspeed.
I'm sorry. You want to put the glasses back on so you can like
cry. Get a little cry.
I am cynical, and although Michel Ancel is the opposite of cynical.
Yes.
I
want to be clear, I also didn't get a Molyneux pitch. They were promising that they had ambition and that they wanted to try a thing.
Right.
And that it might be really fucking messy.
Yep.
They were not promising me the world. I mean, there probably should be a bunch of worlds connected to the solar system.
Also, part of the reason is that it is antithetical to everything that Ubisoft as a company represents, which makes me deeply skeptical of their ability to pull that off.
Because they need the infrastructure.
I don't mean to be deeply cynical, but like,
right.
feels like the closest you get to a crowdfunding pitch from like a publisher. It's like, help us build this shit because they won't give us the resources.
Right. Here's the thing I'll say too. It's like I said, concretely, what do you mean by you want support? And they did not say we want money.
Even
so, I want to be clear. If that happens later, this is me saying...
I don't think that'll happen.
If it does, or if they start taking money for me, here's the thing: is like, what's the difference between crowdfunding and if they start taking money to become a space monkey that gives you access to prototypes?
I think it's different.
Why? Because if I join, there are Kickstarters. I backed dual some bullshit that's a mech game. Because
you're actually tangibly buying into something, right? Like it's one thing if like you're crowdfunding and like, hey, this game might show up in 3 years.
What I'm saying is, but I've backed games before on Kickstarter. We're like, oh, here's a backer baby. Right. Tell us what you think. So what's the difference between that and if I pay to become a space monkey to get access to prototype things?
Well, because I at least from a major publisher perspective, I'm paying access and then I'm getting immediate access to a thing. I think that.
But
is
I do
different.
That on Kickstarter all the time. That's backing. That's not like, you know what I mean?
I'm still saying it's bad. I'm saying, but like, when it's a major publisher who tangibly has access, they can fund this game. Ubisoft can fund this game. So I'm saying if you are putting money into it, you shouldn't put money into pure promise. Your promise is that I put back something and then maybe it shows up 3 years. Like Shenmue 3, right? Like, you're backing something, but then that game maybe ships eventually.
This is me saying I don't think
there's a difference. I'm not going to do either. I don't back video games on Kickstarter. I'm not going to back this, like, even though I really want this thing. But I'm saying if I'm someone that's excited, I think there is a tangible difference between backing a bet. And this is still a bet, but at least you... If you're getting
because
access to
you heard
tangible
the pitch
things.
I just said.
I know.
None of us are confident.
I'm not giving any money to this thing.
Okay. We'll see.
So.
Jade's not in it as far as I don't know. There's someone with green eyes. Jade has green eyes.
Sure.
Jade's name is... I actually don't know. Does Jade have green eyes?
No. Okay. I don't think so.
Like you're an expert, so. What else did people see? Rob, you saw...
Should we just do it?
Let's just
Let's just jump in. Let's just jump in, please. First off, can we start off by reading the tweet?
Which tweet? You have it in front of you?
I just want to start this off by reading the tweet.
Are you totally...
Pixelated Boats tweet?
No.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I don't know. Anyway, either way.
I think we're going to read that tweet.
Okay.
Rob, can you just set this up broadly? When did you set up this demo? This appointment? It was like months ago? Weeks ago. And you thought like, boy, that sounds like a cool thing.
I didn't know anything about it. Like, David Martinez over at Raw Fury, who I have known for... a number of years, used to handle some PR for Paradox.
And that studio just published Tormentor X Punisher, a great top-down twin-stick shooter that also had an accidental Goatsy reference.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Accidental.
Same Punisher.
Adding it up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, if you just go on Google.
Yeah, they're having an interesting month, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
So, here, let me do this.
Uh-huh.
The whole internet loves Milkshake Duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. 5 seconds later... we regret to inform you, the duck is racist.
What? So what did you see today, Rob? Unrelated. Because we're not making any specific
completely unrelated to the tweet.
That would be actionable in a legal court.
Well, to be fair, Dan Martinez over at Raw Fury did sort of chuckle before showing it. He was like, I didn't realize that my week was going to be that we would have the fastest milkshake duck in history. So, like, you know, they're owning it. They're wearing it. I saw the last night from Raw Fury.
Publisher,
which like prior to realizing a lot of things, that is a great trailer.
Yeah.
Oh,
great
God.
Trailer.
Very pretty.
I feel like it was one of the games I was the most excited for out
of
the
Xbox
showcase.
A lot of people. I remember sitting next to Austin and going like, God damn. Yeah, a yo. Yo's were said.
Sometimes you say a yo, and you wish it was a yo-yo so you could bring it back.
Fuck you.
Just saying.
So
I'm pretty good at this. So.
This might actually come back all the way around to like you being a little more interested in that game before we're done here.
Okay.
But,
Raw Fury has done Cathy Rain. They've done Tormentor X Punisher.
Yep.
They're
relatively
Kingdom.
New. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a short list of games they worked on. Mm-hmm. They've generally
didn't
been
they do
pretty
Goner?
Good.
They did Goner.
Yeah,
also.
That was a real good game.
So Then they reached out a while back, a few weeks ago, and said, can't tell you what this game is, but it looks really, really cool. They sent me a couple stills that were, like, you know, deliciously cyberpunky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was in the Xbox showcase, and everyone, the entire internet, went, yo, what a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. and
well, I mean, before that, people were super excited. Like,
yes, absolutely.
Before that, like, that game, the last night had, like, basically been the most mentioned game out of that.
It was the indie,
and usually those indie, like the right. most thing you can hope for as a publisher that publishes small games that are part of these like indie mm-hmm. montages, you become the game that go right. everyone goes ah.
Oh, right, what was yeah. that? Cuphead? Yes, yeah. that I want to play that.
Like yeah. I saw 9Volt tweet like,
oh my god,
this game looks so good, and it was like a GIF, and it had like 500 retweets, and then he tweeted another, and then the third tweet was. Oh no.
Yeah, it was really good.
All right, so anyway,
and the reason it's oh no is because during sort of peak Gamergate, this guy sort of jumped on those hashtags, the Gamergate hashtag, the Not Your Shield hashtag, mm-hmm. and started sort of opining about gamer culture uh-huh. and protecting it.
And the way
and
that
also
feminism...
being extremely anti-feminist.
Yeah.
Like,
let's not, I don't want to dress it up before we get into this. He said shit that was bad.
Yeah.
And said that he believed things that I think are politically toxic and dangerous. So now, how was the interview?
I think he believes things that are bad.
Okay.
No. So to be fair, like to paint a picture here for a second. So his name is Tim Sorrett,
mm-hmm.
and this may not surprise you at all, given the way that game looks and sort of the aesthetic and where it's coming from. Before this, he used to be a graphic designer who did a lot of like branding work.
I can see that,
and that sort of thing. So, like that's one reason why it's such a striking advertisement.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
He also comes across very much like a little bit of a deer in the headlights.
Yeah,
like
I bet.
Like. You know, when I asked him specifically about, so he was sort of going on about how the story of this game is a character sort of gets sucked into something that he doesn't really understand the full consequence, and people play on his alienation, and his life goes in this downward spiral, which I thought provided a great segue he said, and the game world remembers your actions.
Oh, does it?
And so I was like, okay.
Twitter will remember that.
So speaking of unintended consequences and being sort of accidentally radicalized into a movement you didn't understand, let's talk about the Gamergate tweets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's tough to say. You can't read someone's intent or anything like that. Like, everyone is sorry once they're called out on something, right? Like,
right.
I mean,
he had the one tweet.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's quick to say, like, he condemns harassment, and he's also, just to give him, to provide a little more context, he's also English as a second language.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He does not express himself in a particularly nuanced fashion, and so for him, a lot of things, I think, come out blunter than maybe he necessarily intends. On the other hand, he's a very recognizable, you know, sort of personality. He's a smart, fairly, I think, naive person who hasn't thought a lot of things through,
mm-hmm.
but thinks somehow that he's kind of entitled to just sort of weigh in on whatever. And so, even in the interview, he's sort of like...
Also point out he's 24.
He's 24.
So 3 years ago, he was 21.
Yeah,
I'm not setting any of the... Yeah, old enough to know better, and yet...
I said
shitty things, too. I was also old enough to know better.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm just letting people know he's not like a 35-year-old guy.
Yeah,
like.
Sure.
And he did say, like, so for him, and this is maybe something that I've never fully gotten this part, but for him, he said, like, when that whole thing blew up, he was like, I felt like the gamer identity was under such attack. And then what's changed in the last few years for him is that that became sort of a foundational movement for the alt-right, which legitimately does scare the shit out of him. Now, there's those of us who witnessed that, those of us who saw that, and knew people going through, like, the shittiest of the shit. are not surprised by that at all. Like, it's kind of this, like, how did you not see who was lining up, who you were lining up behind? But nevertheless, that's sort of where he's ended up with some of this.
Well, but does that reflect in the game? Or does the game's pitch that was up on Steam as of a couple of days ago still reflect the shitty politics that he has? That are not just shitty politics in the sense that I think of a different tax rate.
I
think a different tax rate is better for society. That awesome. You know what? Like, I have lots of differences with people about small policy changes, big policy changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the pitch for that game is fundamentally that if people are well taken care for, that if people are this is, again, this is based on the Steam description that was up a couple of days ago, that it's a world in which a basic income has been provided for people, and in which that removes their notion of creativity, and that now the it's been a hyper, you know, feminists have taken over, things are, have the level of creativity has been.
That wasn't in the Steam description. That's one of those shitty tweets I think he left years ago.
Oh, you're right. That was him saying my game is. Sorry, yeah. That's better. Is him saying my game is.
Yeah.
Both of those things, yeah, I think deserve to be under scrutiny.
They deserve to be mentioned, like, absolutely.
Yes,
but, like,
right. It was not
that wasn't part
you're
of the
right.
pitch.
Totally.
Where, yeah.
But a game in which, for me, a game in which the core concept is, without being broken under the heel of capitalism, creativity will not flourish, is something that for me is, like, up there with the sorts of beliefs that lead to the oppression of people. And I'm not saying that game is going, but it is eulogizing a world in which competition was the heart of creativity, and I'm glad we're moving away from that world. I'm glad that we're moving into a world in which people are able to support each other and are allowed to find ways to produce art that doesn't necessarily push through the traditional system.
So we got into that too.
Okay.
Long interview.
Yeah, I bet.
So he was also kind of defensive about that, where he was like, it's not that I'm against, like, universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
When he explained it, now I don't know how much of this is him reacting to people sort of calling him out.
Right.
But when he explained this, what he's trying to get at is it's this sort of, like, Wally, Wally World, like National Lampoon's, but
right,
Wally.
Right.
The sure. Wally World.
This has
been
up.
This has been a bit of a National Lampoon. So
yeah. So for him, it's less about, like, universal basic income and more that it's a society driven entirely by leisure and distraction.
Right.
And for him, like, so one of the things that he relates to is this idea that, like, so the game he just created, he said, like, in this world that, like, I'm talking about, like, if I show my game at noon on Monday,
right,
by 10 that night, there's 5 clones that have been generated by machines.
Sure.
And the games are functionally identical. So, like, what does creativity even mean in a world that, like, they've automated, like, automation has replaced just about any human function you can name. And that's kind
it's
of
bizarre what for him to just co-opt the, like, the political term, because,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Well, like, what are you expecting, right? Like, you can still make that game without saying universal basic income,
yes,
like, because that's, because the moment you invoke that,
yes,
that's when
you're saying,
like,
a different thing.
You're saying a different thing. Like, no one's going to disagree with you. Like, the idea of, like, machine learning, automation is going to have, like, unintended consequences that could have an impact on creativity.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm on board. Yeah, I'm afraid for my job 20 years from now. I'm a writer. I think we're going to get there with automation. I really do.
Right.
Like, that's not... Tell me that story. But, like,
I think it's, like, transcribe my interviews. Like, I might be okay with
that
part.
That's how they get in. You go, okay, robot, come. I played Detroit Become Human the other day. That's
I got
how
10 minutes.
In.
Like,
actually, that actually came up in the interview I did with David Cain.
Oh, really?
So transcribing was like, listen, man, your job's gone. Like, 15 years from now, nah. Like, robots are taking your jobs.
I'll be, okay. I'm
your
sorry.
Kid will be
I'm
16.
Late, four, okay.
I'll, you got to pay for college soon.
I'll finally be 18.
Yep. I saw Jeff Green today, your other dad.
Oh, did you work out the canonical differences in our lineage?
No, I think
we're
just both your dad, I think.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, two dads.
Anyway, sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, it is now at this point, you're totally in the, you know, the Heisenberg principle, where, like, how much is what he's working on, like, changing in the criticism he's getting. That stuff is really tough to tease apart. But the other weird thing, and this is where you start to dig into, like, again, is this person in control of their message? Are they certain? Because here's the funny thing. So your character, the reason... So basically in this world, everything is, like, done via, like, neural implant or whatever. So, like, people are walking around and they're not even holding phones in front of them. They're just, like, reading their social feed, like, basically on their eye display or whatever on their HUD.
Right, we've seen Black Mirror.
Yeah. It's very Black Mirror. hey, what if technology is bad? Where he's going with it is that your character is like physically unable to take those mods, and therefore
Prey introduces concepts like
that stuff's interesting.
And so what he starts talking about is this idea that your character is like alienated from the society, and like everyone else is like having fun with this technology and like is included, and he feels excluded, and then someone shows up and it's basically like a little like Tyler Durden-esque, where it's like, hey, what if you construct that against the society? And, like,
did he say Tyler Durden-esque?
I floated it out there. That was, but yeah, he like what he was describing is very Tyler Durden-ish, where it's someone's like, let's fight the society, let's strike back, and then the thing he sort of sketched out is it's the game is told over a series of nights as your character's life goes increasingly to shit. And it's entirely possible that you accidentally joined the terrorist movement. Stuff like that. So he's like, it's very much a...
Right.
The setup of
this
the game...
This feels so much like just on the other side of... What was the cyberpunk bartending? Valhalla, that came out. Which came from a developer who had spent a lot of time on 4chan, who kind of grew up inside board culture. And like, there was a lot of that in that game. And it felt, for me while playing through it, always like... The lead dev on that had pushed through it and gotten away, and there was still like occasionally a mark of it.
Well, because like, you're left with scars from any of that.
Like
stuff.
Little things, like the police force in that game were called the White Knights, right?
It was right.
Like, okay, but then also I guess there's some stuff here that's actually like pretty good, and this feels like just on the other side of it, where it's like clearly you're trying to work through this thing. You're trying to work through this like experience you've had about identity and about your relationship to people who are way worse than you thought they might be.
Right.
But I haven't played it, but based on his comments and based on the pitch that he wrote for the game, like it feels like, despite trying to distance himself from the alt-right, like there's core ideals that still are fundamentally shit.
Also, like there are like stronger ways to distance
yourself. Yes, totally.
Wait.
And granted, like it's the middle of E3, he's with a publisher, like, and none of these are like caveats that are excusable, but
yeah.
And you would like to think that if you actually have had that. Like realization that you could say it in much stronger terms about like your distance from it.
What if like I'm confused because he made the game years ago. He started the game years ago.
A game jam prototype.
Made a game jam prototype.
This is like a relatively recent like development and expansion.
Y'all, it is like the weirdest fucking thing for me to do this because like I don't know that I ever said it out loud at the time. No one knew who I was at the time. Right? I was making a Twine game in that same Cyberpunk game jam. I was a student, and that game like. Easily was the most exciting thing about that jam for most people. It was a Cyberpunk game jam in which you played a guy who got out of a flying car and walked down a Cyberpunk street and went into a club and shot a guy. And this is the last.
I remember playing it. Yeah.
Right, and I left it, and it got tons of ratings. It got like everybody loved it. Everybody loves Milkshake Duck. And at the time, I was like, man, fuck the Cyberpunk game jam. Also, I was already like, fuck the Cyberpunk game jam because it turned out that one of the organizers ended up being very shitty about some other stuff. That was like
there was another Milkshake Talk.
Dog, yeah, like I
they're all over
pulled
the place.
Reference of the Cyberpunk game jam out of a century because I didn't want to like be part of it anymore because of the head organizer ended up doing some really shitty stuff, and the fact at the time that game had gotten so well supported, I was like incredibly bummed about because it represented so much of what I didn't like about contemporary cyberpunk, which was that it's all flash and no substance,
right?
That it's all aesthetic and no politic. That it's all like neon and chrome and smoke.
It's just Blade Runner without what Blade Runner is about.
I mean, I've said this before about Blade Runner. Blade Runner opens up with a flying car flying over oil fields on fire.
Yep.
Everybody remembers the flying cars. Mm-hmm. Nobody remembers the oil fields on fire. That's what happens with Blade Runner.
Right.
That's what happened with Cyberpunk. And so it was weird seeing that trailer then on the Xbox briefing because I had hope again. I was like, okay. You made a jam game that was all flash. Now this is a bigger game, and it looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you had space to develop some ideas around that flash that helps communicate something. And so to see this pitch, and to hear the answers that he's given you, and to hear, see what he's done last week, it's just like, the balloon had been expanded once, it deflated and sat on a table for years, and the Xbox briefing came, and it was like, big-ass balloon again, pop! And now it's popped, and it's like I'm worried I won't be able to ever inflate that balloon again.
Wait, the balloon is Cyberpunk or the balloon is that game?
That game.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if the story idea like came to him while he was on the opposite side, and now he's flipping it because of everything that's going on. That's like, because it sounds like it could be from either side.
It's been 3 years. There's lots of years for inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like,
and those years are like,
big years.
Big years.
Yes, those
like,
are the years.
I mean, those were years where, like, I figured out a lot of, like,
totally
bad shit.
And he seems very much like someone still in the process of figuring stuff out. Like,
And maybe this, like, whatever this game is.
Totally.
Whatever that, like,
totally.
Like, maybe this game is a moment.
Listen.
I'm going to tear this bandit off right now.
Okay.
Just because it's, like, the part of this conversation that I, like, I remember pretty clearly. And this gives you an example of, like, the way that, like, things go wrong for this guy and, like, why he's going to be, I think, an issue and a little bit of an anchor on this game. You know, asking about that stuff, he sort of, like, went straight into the, you know, skip, I want to address this. Stephen, never mind. Different tweet. He's like, you know I support feminism. Okay. If you look at what feminism is all about, I'm behind it 100%. But, and I was like, fuck, here we go.
Settle in.
But there was no real but, and that's the thing. Oh. It's like, for him, a big part of what turns him off these movements is, like, they just seem so divisive, and, like, people get so entrenched, and there's so much certainty. Yeah. And it's like, okay, yes, I understand, but that is politics. That is disagreement. When principle is at stake, and when people's lives are at stake,
that's called ideology. That's called taking a position.
Yeah.
But he's in this place in his life where he's very much, I think, in that Bioshock Infinite headspace.
Totally.
Where he's like, oh man, you know what's really terrible?
Is polarization both sides.
Is the problem. Polarization is the problem.
Which is like, and again, like, this is what leads, this is like that, why I keep coming back to the cyberpunk as flair and nothing else thing, is that, like, yeah, wanting to show a game in which, like, it's all just pretty aesthetic, and you don't have to have that, like, deep thing that does say, no, some sides are worse than other sides, is the thing that happened to the genre. It's why I'm so fucking fed up about it. It's like, this was a thing once that was explicitly about responding to specific historical circumstances. And the historical circumstances have changed, and so should any genre keep up with it. And it sounds like there's some loose idea of it, but I need to know that for me to get excited about a game that deals with these things at all, I want him to have had that moment with himself.
You have to,
like,
bring...
What do
to
I have?
Right, like, there's actually nothing inherently wrong with saying, like, a progressive political future in which, like, shit, unintended consequences.
Totally.
But
if you don't have that argument...
You have to have earned, personally, ideologically, that... Have that moment to understand the consequences of having that moment before you can make the argument against it, or to even understand what it is to make that argument.
Right. Like, fucking, you know what? It's not hard for me to believe a world in which good intentions go bad.
Exactly. That's like the history of a lot of the world.
Totally. And so, and I'm not hiding myself from that. So, I just wish he'd come to you with an argument that was like, and this is, here it is.
And
this is the case.
And I'm worried that, like, 6 months from now, then, like, he has that argument, but you don't actually know, like, is that just the PR argument, or is that, like, what's in the politics of that game at that point? I don't know.
So, you know, one thing I will say, and I want to give some credit here to Raw Fury, they're not managing him, like
they wouldn't have let you do the interview. Yeah. They would have pulled him from E3. Like, if there's something, that publishers have... Delete those tweets. Like, come on, do your job. Like, I'm glad we're having this conversation, but also, like...
I mean, the conversation, the thing, the job that they should have done originally was, like, yo, this game looks really good, but we need to have a talk about what you believe in.
Yeah.
What's the content of the game? What's the stuff that you're trying to communicate here? Do you have a good grasp on it? Not even, like, what is it? Do you have a good grasp on it?
If we're not going to delete these tweets, are you ready for the answer?
Yes.
You are going to back this up one way or the other. And if it's a way that, like, you're going to get a bunch of blowback, at least be articulate and ready for it, as opposed to what appears to have happened now, which is, like, just hands in the air and everyone's caught by surprise.
3 hours later. Yeah.
5 hours later.
Yeah. 5 hours later. Fuck. That's all.
Like, 5 hours is a long time.
Be ready for it. And like, for me, like, that's totally the thing.
If he wants to rail against progressive politics, if he wants to be that guy, then have the argument.
Eli Roth a couple of years ago did that movie about cannibals.
Yeah, yes, Green Room.
Green Room. No.
Green Inferno. Green Inferno.
Green Inferno. And I was like, ugh.
I didn't see it because I heard it has a lot of really shitty
from
politics.
The jump, the kind of trailer was like
he used SJW.
It's basically that the pitch, and again, this is a pitch that I'm like halfway on board with, and it falls off the thing where it's like, oh, it's a bunch of like young college educated. It's like people who went to Oberlin decided they want to go save brown people.
Yes,
and then like it turns out that's not how you do things in the world. On board already.
Right.
Then it turns like they go down there to save brown people, and all the brown people are cannibals.
Yes. And also, it's like turns out SJWs don't know what they're doing. Right. Right. Like, and, it's like the verbiage, the vocabulary.
Then
Guy Raffkin
was like, "Yeah, I know. I stand by my shit."
He does. Yes.
And I fucking disagree with him.
Yes.
But like he was ready.
It was not accidental.
And at that point, I was like, "I'm not going to see that. I'm not going to support it. I'm good. I'm done." And he's going to keep having a career. And the thing that is rough for this developer is like. He was not ready for it. It was rough for all Furious. They were not ready for it. They did not have messaging around it. They did not have a message from the developer saying, like, this is what his beliefs are. We're here to support art from all sorts of different creators. And
we expect that people are going to disagree with
this. Exactly. We think it has strong political messages. We think, or like,
as a company, we are inclusive and diverse.
Exactly. And that means working with the creator, blah, 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 blah. There is a way to message it where, like, what we've done by now is side-eye it instead of spending 45 minutes talking about it.
What would you argue about the discussion becomes the politics of the game, which is a more interesting discussion than like the like old tweets from 3 years ago, which we don't know what that means, right? Like I'm ready to have that argument.
I'm not even saying that they should.
No, absolutely not.
If you're gonna make the shit stand by,
but I don't.
If you're gonna publish it,
but I don't want a half apology in which I don't know what it means. Right? Like,
they might still come out with a statement. We don't know, right?
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe.
Like, it is like the middle of
the day. But I'm just more interested in having the argument, because that's exciting, to have the argument with someone who's like, I made this thing, let's talk about it.
I'll talk about it. Shit.
Right. I think Ralph Fury may have made a statement.
Okay.
Because David referred to it, so I don't know if it's been released, or but there may have been a statement.
Okay.
It definitely, but yeah, so they're just kind of like, they're letting this ride. Like
that's the way to do it from their perspective.
Yeah. And they were in the room still listening to him, but... Like, they weren't managing him, they weren't sort of trying to steer the questioning. I think where this is going to get really challenging to sort of critique and read is that he comes across as a guy who is so thoroughly still in the middle of figuring out his shit, and he is just starting to do the work, you know, when it comes to, like, understanding what he believes about this shit, and, like, what he thinks about the direction of, like, hey, where do you think capitalism is going?
Right.
And the problem is...
It's hard. It's a hard question.
And then he built a whole world... on his premises that he may not fully, he hasn't fully thought through, and he doesn't fully understand the ramifications of, nor does he understand how they relate back to the real world and the actual lives they represent.
Right.
So that's where things get fucked up. Let's talk about the game for just one second.
Oh, yeah, sure. Please.
It actually sounds really cool, and that's the infuriating thing.
What are you actually doing?
Okay, so the main influence here is Flashback.
Awesome. One of my favorite games.
Yeah. And the big difference is, the way you put it is, remember Flashback is basically a platformer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can still do things like, you can go catch a cyberpunk cab and, like, go talk to your friends, do quests. But a lot of it is platforming. The city is represented as a series of platforms and jumps.
Sure.
This is not like that. It's more that the city has a layout. You're navigating it, like, in 2D, but then you go into the frame... And that takes you into other 2D planes.
That's part of that effect looks so good. It's part of why people went,
It looks, and it does look stunning. It is such a gorgeous looking game. The other things that started to really get me excited and impressed is that, so again, the game takes place over a series of nights. It starts with night one, where you're sort of like radicalized or whatever, and then like it's the ripples of consequences from the choices you make each night. And some of it's going to be side quest stuff, but it is an open world, like, 2D adventure.
Yeah.
And apparently, and I don't know, like, I don't know how involved this gets. According to him, every character represented on these screens is, like, an AI entity. And is, like, doing things. Hmm. And, like, has, like...
Like, has needs and wants, or has a routine that's been programmed?
That I don't know.
Okay, but one of those, something like that.
But some, but
they're doing more than just pacing back and forth.
And according to him, they will like remember certain things about certain interactions, like including small details. But where the other part of this kicks in is that it is, because it's cyberpunk, it's also a huge surveillance state.
Sure.
And so as you start, you know, getting up to shit in the city, the city itself starts to remember. The way he's described it is you realize the city you're in is like a huge trap that is increasingly like slamming shut on you. And so each night, like, more of the automated surveillance systems are going to be turned against you. More characters will, like, remember the shit you got up to. Like, it's possible you become, like, you know, sort of not welcome in your own neighborhood. And you'll want to start paying attention to, like, who's around you in these scenes, because it will matter. Like, even incidental NPCs you don't think matter might prove to be crucial down the road. And so, like, the game he's describing, and I saw some of it working, like, mostly what he was showing was just art and stuff from the trailer, but then he actually, like, brought out a short demo that they'd showed to Microsoft some time ago to show, like, there's an actual game here
that they're working on. Right, you should be on the stage.
And it was really, really cool looking. And so...
Here we are.
If there were ever a place to hire consultants to look at that fucking game before it goes out... that's my free advice to Raw Fury, I think. Even more than, like, manage this guy and maybe give him a book or two. like, put that game in front of people who are not, like, straight affluent white dudes.
Right, yeah.
Because I think... The
stuff might come up.
I want to just briefly say, like, that this part of it also did happen to Cyberpunk historically. Cyberpunk was made by a bunch of straight affluent white... Or straight white dudes who became affluent through the success of Cyberpunk. And then there was a second wave that was, like, queer and you know, came from people of color, came from women. And in some sense, like, I want to be clear that when I'm big upping past Cyberpunk, I'm also saying, like, hey, maybe this is part of it, too. Maybe we get another version. Maybe we see somebody who sees this game and is like, yeah, that was cool. Like,
fuck that game,
fuck that.
But...
I'm going to go do some other shit. Yeah. There's stuff here that I want to... I'm going to tell my version of this story.
Right.
So,
or some of that visual style or whatever.
Totally,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
We'll see. Is that 2017? 2018?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
It might have been 2017, and now it's 2018.
Right.
It's been, you know what, it is also, to some degree, not to put on the analyst cap a little bit, but, like, it's one of those, it's a learning moment for this new tier of small publisher, where, like, you have the Devolvers and the Raw Furies, and there's Devolvers bigger at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's still small.
They used company. To be kind of like
right.
That.
They grew from being a developer like Raw Fury. Yep. They had a couple of games that come out a year. You know, obviously Annapurna is connected to a huge movie studio, but is still small in terms of the size of games that it's putting out. And this feels like one of those moments that's like, would a bigger studio have let this move through? Would they have caught it? Or would they have at least had enough people on the project to where, like,
they're ready for it.
They're ready for it. We're ready to have communication. At the other hand, as I was saying that, I remember that Ghost Recon Wildlands came out this year. And we didn't spend any time, like, shit-talking that. We ran one story from Jack DeKeet that was like, this game is, like, miserable. And
if that game had hit harder, it would have been a much larger discussion about it.
But it can be weird to suddenly realize that you spent an hour talking about a game that, like, a couple of people are making.
Right.
And that a small number of people are going to play.
Yes.
And not spending anywhere near that much time this year talking about the thing that cost hundreds of millions of dollars or, you know, at least dozens of millions of dollars.
And tons of people did play.
And people played
it. And actually, it was quietly a hit.
Right.
From what
exactly.
I understand. Like,
yeah. But it's also the critic's dilemma.
Well, and that also you can dilute an ideology.
Right. Enough
to
that
game, right? Like, famously, like, people who worked on the original Watch Dogs that,
right.
like, were, like, in writing positions that, you know, expressed really aberrant views,
yes.
like, especially related to Gamergate. Yeah. And yet, it then becomes difficult to ascribe Twitter, tweets to a game because it's made by a jillion people.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, it becomes easier to distill that, and not to say it's unfair... But there is a disproportionate amount of attention because it is easier to talk about
one
that,
guy did a thing,
right? Yeah, whereas you look at like a game that made by hundreds, in which like, well, how much did that person actually touch?
Right.
So well, it's interesting, but complicated.
Also, Wildlands came out like at a time when tons of other games
True.
Were coming out,
yeah.
and this was like a highlight of an E3 press
yeah.
conference that tons
yeah.
of people were tuning into, and tons
totally.
Of people were tweeting
It has
about.
An aesthetic
yeah.
that
so
people
like,
are, like, very, very into. Like it was it hit in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And people
well,
were,
and
like,
was,
tweeting the whole time. Of course they're, like, looking this dude up.
Right.
You know?
And it was candy for, I think, people who do feel disaffected from a lot of, like, AAA,
sure.
You know, games. The type of stuff that tends to appear and get spotlighted on a E3 showcase, this was sort of, like, the cool, like, antidote to that also, like, plays into those cyberpunk, you know, tastes.
Yep.
You know, corporate, like,
it's no cyberpunk
2077. No, we have to wait for this.
CD Projekt Red, you do not break my heart like this. Do not. The Cyberpunk universe was like a black dude designed that, like hoping, and he's involved. Mike Pondsmith is involved in that game. There's some videos of him online, just walking around LA at night, talking about what Cyberpunk is and like the history of it that they shot 2 years ago
for that game.
For that game,
Those videos good.
Those videos are good. It's just like, you know, the shots in Collateral, the movie Collateral.
Yeah,
it's
UI.
Yeah, it was like the overpasses. It's like that, except it's like it's a black dude with my build and a really good voice. Walking around with you know, sunglasses on at night in LA.
Right, cyberpunk.
Talking about Cyberpunk. Yeah, it's good. Really good. Feel like those up. God, all right.
Rob, are you going to be, like, putting that up on the site?
Yeah, as soon as I can, like, make out my audio. Like, the combination of Loudy 3, like, interview room, and then, like, a pretty
it's an hour.
And, yeah, it's, so that's going right. to be, that is going to be a joy to transcribe.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Well, it's tuned. Something people can look forward to.
Yeah. You played another game that. So, briefly, we have a video going up probably in the next couple of days of the IndieCade showcase, or a couple of games in the IndieCade showcase. And that is off in a little corner in the South Hall this year. It is always in the South Hall. And they sometimes do themes around something. And this year it's Resist, which is like, I know we're pivoting hard from one side of politics to another side of politics, or I guess we're staying in the realm of the political.
Not all the games were that way, but there was like there was a pattern of games where like, hey, like one of the things we were looking forward to theme this year was the idea of Resist.
And I don't want to go over too many things that we've already shot in another video that'll come out on YouTube tomorrow or the next day. But you played a game called The Cat in the Hijab?
Yeah. So I actually got to chat with the CEO a bunch who, really quick, I won't get too far into it because I did interview her and that'll be going up on video. But she let me know that, like, they didn't decide on a theme. It was more of, like, the game devs decided on a theme because these are all games that have been in the works for, you know, the last year since the last IndieCade. And, going through and choosing the games, like, these were easy choices because they were good games and, like, they all had this similar theme because this is what the world
is
focused on right now. I played a game called The Cat in the Hijab. It was a short, super short demo, like, 2 minutes long. The game is actually out on Itch. You guys can play it now. You're a cat in a hijab on a moving train, and you are interacting with other cats who, in the video, I kept referring to as people and then correcting myself, who are, like, one person will be harassing you, and then it's a game where you're making choices of how to interact. Mm. And, like, based on your interaction, you'll garner a different reaction from this cat. And so there's someone who's harassing you. There's someone who's like, hey, why do you wear that thing on your head? And you're kind of, like, explaining it to them. And then there's someone who, like, is harassing another cat on the train.
It was a person again.
You know what?
Is it because you know all cats are people, basically?
Yes, all cats are people.
Also, to be clear, is everyone in this game a cat?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like...
So cats are people in that sense.
Yeah, it's all cats.
The analogy holds up.
Yeah, so, and then there's one where, like, someone on the train is getting harassed, and you have the option to, like, help or ignore because you don't want to be harassed, and it was very good. It was very good. Awesome. And they had another cat game there. About
called Cats or People.
Called Cat in the Something. There were two Cat in the Something. The other one was about
unrelated
politics.
The themes of Resist
and Cats
cat are people. Right. Cats and things.
The other one was about
the hat?
Politics in Iran,
was it cat in the
which
hat?
I didn't
cat
get to play.
Hat.
So, lots of cat games. There
Was that already released game with the Iranian Revolution? That one that came out like last year?
Yeah, wait. Which one? 17 or 1970?
Yeah. I don't know if that's it.
It's a cat game.
Oh, it's a cat game.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That's a game about people or photographers. Not that cats can't be people who are...
No judging.
There were some other politically focused games, like Political Truth, where it's like an app and you're like... Cool. It's about fake news.
I need to, like, go by there.
You gotta go by there,
Mark. Actually, I was, like, near there and weirdly got to talk about the union, the voice acting strike. That's like the political sphere of E3 this year. All the politics talk is happening, the IndieCade in the area around it.
Yeah, and then like there'll be a video that goes up. But, like, two of the games we checked out was this one called Riot Civil Unrest, which looks at a bunch of different historical instances of different riots and protests. And
is there a Detroit style meter of violence or pacifism?
Unfortunately, the developer was not there when I was trying to figure out the game, so okay. I didn't give a great sense of, like, the mechanics of it, but, you know, the designer talked about, like, having been abroad and, like, been witnessed and participated in, like, different protests and things like that, and, like, how specifically he discussed how the media portrayal of, like, protests is often, like, that is usually the line between, like, what is a riot, what is a protest, how our actions are interpreted or misinterpreted. And then the other game was called Borders, which was developed by... It's already out. Borders is already out.
Okay.
This game, Riot, will be out in early access in a couple of weeks. Borders was made by a designer whose his parents, you know, snuck across the border from Mexico to the United States. He didn't realize that until many years later. His parents guilt-tripped him about it a lot and said, like, well, like, when he didn't want to go to school, they said, well, we snuck across the border to get here. Like, in, like, a, you know, life's okay now sort of sense. Yeah. And this game is already out. It was made during the early parts of Trump, like, entering the campaign. Takes on, like, a much different context. Like, one of the interesting mechanics of the game... Interesting is, like, a... Interesting mechanics of the game is that when you're trying to get across the border, you're managing your hydration and also managing avoiding the border patrol. And when you die, your skeleton is permanent. And there's permanence to the to your death, and so that when you start again, you see piles of skeletons.
That's terrifying.
There are in this version because it's instanced towards his build of the game. If you were to play it, it's instanced towards your build of the game. So people that play it on your machine...
Right, but this is the E3 build.
And there are 1,700 skeletons.
No.
Well, he took it from text. This is the build he's taken all around. He said there were 300 skeletons
added
to
E3. Well, like, for us, it's like 18.
Right.
That's weird.
And
interesting.
The idea was, it was rooted in when his parents stuck across the border. His father, they were hiding, like, waiting to get across, and they, like, just saw a body that was clearly, like, someone that had tried to get across, and, like, there was just...
Oh, my gosh,
like, skeletal remains, and, like, that stuck with his father. Yeah. And so, it was really interesting. You know, he went into the fact that, you know, the reaction has been, like, really positive from a lot of circles, but where he is from, he's got, the reaction was not great, extremely racist. And I said, well, where did the racism happen? He said Facebook. And I was like, oh, well, that explains everything.
Sense.
You should have
started
with
that
part.
Sense.
Yeah,
that
adds up.
So, interesting, mechanically, the game, not that interesting, but the story behind it is really interesting.
Yeah,
and that's the story of, like, a lot of
small
politically motivated games, like, this came out of a game jam, right? So, like, Made in 7 Days, like, so, like, forgivable, and the story behind it is very interesting.
And also, like, it's really rad for me to see people cutting their teeth on small projects like that.
Yep.
Like, I often kind of, like, wither at the comparison to the kind of, like, 1960s, 70s kind of, like, growth of the smaller art film, the kind of, like, independent film director. But, like, a lot of those people came out of art school and, like, made lots of short films that were experimental or that were political or that had, like, a degree of verite or had a degree of, like, grittiness that the big studios were not, you know, performing, were not interested in any way. And then, like, eventually became, you know, made huge cinematic masterpieces that we hold up today forever. And so the process of seeing more people make small games is really exciting, like, because those are the people.
It's how you prototype, like, how do you turn politics into design? It's like you do that in a small way.
Tough. Yep, exactly. So that's exciting. I think there's any other political games you should put in this political block. Kingdom Come Deliverance
gets pretty political.
Okay,
that's a game about knights and farming.
Can you set up what that game?
What
is
that game?
So it kind of comes across like Witcher sans magic.
Okay.
And monsters.
So Sam's like
maybe a little
Town,
Mountain Blade
character.
Yeah, a little bit of that too. But yeah, it's politics, man. Like, it takes it to King Sigismund of Hungary.
Okay.
And, like, it is radically pro King Wenceslas.
I just want to make clear, go look up the designer for that game. Also connected to Gamergate. But also, Steven Totillo, I believe, last year.
Yes.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I remember
this. It's all coming back.
An extended, This is, yes, this what is we the want Bible. From right. the guy about last night is like he has very specific beliefs and is articulate about them. You may disagree with them, right. like powerfully,
right?
But he has beliefs, can talk about them, and is willing to argue with you about them. So anyway, I just wanted to set that up for
God.
Since its politics are so like located in the like 13th century, though, that like it doesn't
kind of like
come
Gamergate.
It doesn't really come through, except possibly in that your hero seems like a little bit of a douchebag.
Oh, sure.
Like you are totally kind of like the shitty son of this honest rural blacksmith, who just kind of like hangs out with his vandal friends and like, let's go fuck up someone's house just because we can. He was talking shit about King Wenceslas, and we're not down with that. And
is this a prequel to Night in the Woods?
Like, and he's a German. Yeah, so like, there's that. It looks like if you're interested in this time period, like it, like if,
what are you doing in this game though? Right, like, is it like a campaign? You're like yes. going like a you're a per, like
you're an individual. You're an individual. Geralt. You're not Geralt.
No,
you're just
you are Geralt. I just told you you're a little douchebag.
You're a little douchebag.
Yeah, who is the son
is
of a village?
Name? Okay,
yeah.
Little douchey.
The son of a humble village blacksmith with a past.
Okay.
Your father was like a swordsmith who, for whatever reason, has gone to nowhere. And then you get up to some adventures in your village, and eventually, like later that day, I think,
right.
your village is going to be destroyed by like marauding like Hungarian troops.
Okay.
And you're going to survive, and then you're going to hook up with other nobles from Bohemia, and that's where it turns into a little bit more of a Mountain Blade, but also The Witcher. You're going to be doing quests for various nobles, forging like connections and alliances with some of these people, and then sort of getting back your own.
But like part of the pitch of the game is that, I mean, not politics aside, but like it is they're trying to like situate it in like a very like specific historic period, like. Trying to do the research, not necessarily in the political sense, but like in like terms of like the world, the geography, like they're trying to take that part of it like extremely seriously.
Yeah, and they definitely like spotlighted that where you know they're very clear. Most of the characters you're going to meet, most of the named characters, like sort of exist in the historical record. So it's very much like trying to sit. It's very much a historical like fiction.
Right,
it situates you. In and among like recognizable historical figures.
And then, what is like the gameplay like? Is it like a more like action oriented? Like, because Mountain Blade is a little more like simmy and like
this is a little more RPG.
Oh, okay.
So like what you get up to in the village, and it sort of sketches out the various ways you can approach things. You know, one of the first things you have to do in this demo is your father needs to complete this sort of masterpiece sword that he's working on. And to do that, you need to go get money that he's owed from kind of a shitty client, a deadbeat. And to do that, you can go a few different directions. You can go kick the guy's ass. You can just go steal the money that you're owed. Or you can like try and talk him into paying off his debt. But if it goes wrong, which it did for me, then...
You have to play it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll end up having to kind of brawl this dude. And one of the things they sort of promised is that a lot of these quests branch pretty extensively within themselves. So, like, if you fail the speech check on the town drunkard that owes your dad money, then you have a fight. And if you beat him in the fight, then he'll be like, I give up, you know, take the money, like, right. you know, leave me alone. If you get your ass kicked, which may have happened.
Wait, were you playing the Viking character you played in that other game?
Look... A lot of people can tell you about a brawny, combat-intensive character, Austin. If you want to go here...
I got you.
About, yeah, but me, I am a delicate, soft boy, medieval squire.
Give me the speech check.
Yeah, give me that speech check.
But you failed the speech
check.
Didn't
work.
And then lost the fight.
Well, he didn't get to create his character. He might have put the stats in differently if given a chance.
Right.
So then he's like, I'm going to fight you. And then I was like, oh my, that is a short little health bar you've got. That's not much of a stamina bar either. And that dude's in your face. And it's all very...
This seems very Witcher 3-ish, like, where, like, if a bunch of those quests can take those twists and turns,
right.
but those seem less decision oriented as much as action oriented, right? Like, so we're like in The Witcher, sometimes the reason a quest goes left or right is because you've chosen left or right, as opposed to you failed a fight or something like that.
Right, and this is where, like, so in these interactions, there's four approaches. I'm going to botch the name for them. Okay. Like, so in your conversation, you're going to see, like,
Princeton. Gladio,
Pompeo,
and
Knack.
Is that it? Is the four ones? Those are the four.
You got it.
Okay.
Wow.
Is it actually the four? But real talk. Is it the four Final Fantasy boys? Is it like be a tough boy?
Be a soft boy.
Be like a smart boy, or soft boy, smart boy.
Be.
Not all smart boys are soft boys. I want to put that out there.
Be a royal boy.
Ooh. That is one of the Final Fantasy ones.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, literally.
And what's the fourth?
I can't remember. Oh,
A drunk boy?
Yeah. No, I think it was, like, possibly, like, be a pious boy? I can't remember.
That's not in Final Fantasy.
Yeah, okay. So basically, so if you go the speech route, for instance, you've got to beat the other character's own speech rating. So, like, if you're like
head to head.
Yeah, if you're persuasion 5 and you don't know what his persuasion is, and if you've maybe, like, scouted around this character a little bit and, like, talked to other characters about him, when you have that encounter, it will tell you, like, okay, now you know this guy's, like, a 4.
Can you not be a boy?
No, you are.
You can be a B-O-I.
Boy.
Mm-hmm.
No, you are. This is very specific.
Is it France? Bois?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you have to be a female man. Okay.
You have to be this little shithead.
Oh, it's like, a specific little shithead.
Oh yeah, no, like this is not like roll your own character. Like, you are this kid.
Roll your own shithead.
Yeah, like you can influence the direction of this character, but like he is who he is, for better or worse.
His name is his name.
Yeah. Austin, I mean, I know you want it to be the one way.
I do. But it's the other way.
But it's kind of cool. So if you get your ass kicked by this dude later,
which you did,
yeah, maybe. I mean, look,
allegedly,
supposedly.
Rick in the law office says we have to say allegedly when we say someone got their ass kicked.
Sources inform me that Rob might have gotten his ass kicked.
So
sources close to
Rob's acne inform me.
So then you go off to, like, the tavern, and you encounter your friends there who are overhearing this German down here in Bohemia talking shit about King Wenceslas. And he's like, King Wenceslas doesn't seem like much of a king to me since he's in prison.
Ooh. And, got him.
Yeah. To be fair, he is in prison. Like, it's kind of an awkward
thing. He's in prison. That's the definition of got.
So your friends are like, this guy's talking shit about King Wenceslas. Let's go grab fistfuls of manure.
Yep.
Light it on fire.
Smear his whitewashed house with shit.
Oh, damn.
And you know, it occurs to me, in this era, there's no power washers.
No, that's...
Like, you actually can't just fix that.
Yeah.
Like, you just whitewashed your house, and someone comes and, like, paints it with, like,
animal And you pieces. Gotta hate somebody, because they probably didn't have gloves back then either, so your hands are all
gross. Right. Yeah, you have, like...
Maybe animal guts?
Like, oh, maybe.
You know? Yeah. Like,
no, don't do that.
Ew!
Hey, I gotta go again.
Think of Jurassic Park.
I don't like that.
It's sort of like that.
The internet, where people are just gonna take all the sounds you're making.
It's like, it's like when Jim Carrey comes out of that fake rhino's butt.
The Mask, my favorite movie.
The Mask. Like in The Mask.
So you can go to your friends.
Lots of poop. That's
and they're like, we're gonna cover this guy's house in shit. And... They're like, you want...
Is that a direct quote?
Pretty much.
13th century historical accuracy. Good. We're going to cover this guy's house in shit.
Get around the Camaro. Get in the Camaro. Get that shit in the back.
Like, is that a horse? No, it's my horse Camaro.
You want in on this? And I was like, you have the option of being like, no, I don't really want to like do the whole shit painting thing. Or you can be like, all right, I can be persuaded.
Been there.
Oh, been they there. Persuade you?
What?
They persuade you?
No. You can be like, maybe. If you go help me kick this guy's ass and get this money.
This sounds like the best game ever. Like, if you help me beat this guy's ass, I will wipe shit all over this other asshole's house with you.
Okay, yeah. Live your life.
That sounds like the best game ever.
And so what they're painting, not in shit, but like with words.
Maggie in the chat says, I like to call it shainting, and that's very bad.
Banned.
Shit.
What I'm excited to figure out is what the shanting equivalent is going to be in all these other questions. How's that beer tasting?
I had to put it down.
So, like, all these quests are going to branch this way, according to the developer. So, like, it's kind of cool in that a lot of the things you're going to do aren't going to have these like fail states necessarily.
Right.
Each failure is just going to get you deeper into this like chain of failures or chain of favors.
Deeper
life.
just really
deeper
into
shit. Yeah, I got you.
That sounds like really interesting.
Oh, yeah. So combat is not what you're like.
Oh.
It's Daggerfall like.
Oh, what does that even mean?
You hit the button?
That's what it means. Like, your interface turns in to, like, your little paws come up in front of you, and, like, you start, like, fighting.
Xenoclash?
Can you fight? Can you two fight?
Yeah. So, like, you know.
T-Rexes?
Are we cats?
You might be.
The cat in the helmet. That was the other game.
Okay, so Patrick is, like, hitting me. He's, like, hitting me. And then you can be like, I'm guarding. And it's like that. So, that's kind of how this game is going to go. But now imagine this with swords. So it can also do that, right?
Right.
So it's like sort of like those pool like noodles things. Yeah. So that's kind of how it plays out.
That chair. That's on our chair.
It's my chair now.
Oh, true.
Oh my god.
True.
You may notice if you replace their antique wicker chairs with like a plastic and a rod neck chair.
We went to Target. That's an upgrade. Yeah. That's plastic. That'll last you.
So they show some battle scenes as well.
Wait, like larger battle scenes?
Yeah, and this is where it gets a little Mountain Blade. So,
is it just 1,000 people doing like this thing?
No, it actually looks way better.
I'll play that game.
The other characters, their models look fine. They look like fighting looks awesome. In your first person perspective, it just looks a little silly.
I see. So they're like big battles where you're like ordering wings,
just like wide sweeping animations as opposed to
Okay.
Yeah, and so like, they showed a mission where you're dab going fight. After this. Yeah.
I'm not going to dab fight you. I'm not. I almost did it, and I thought, I don't want to. No, I'm not ready to be another GIF.
Yeah, I already seen Brad Shoemaker.
Yeah.
So they show this battle where like you're going in with your troops on this lord who's like talk shit or something. There's a lot of like consequences for talking shit.
I just love how this is being described. Like you're talking shit. We're gonna fuck this guy's house up. We're gonna jump this guy.
Yeah,
this sounds all
right. Well, look, it's the Middle Ages, right? And well, like the Middle Ages basically
everywhere.
There's poop everywhere, and like masculinity is super fragile.
And do they know that, or are they just like committed to the realism because? It was back when
they somehow have to back into saying like, "Whoa, men are fragile."
Yeah. Whoops.
Everyone's like that guy. That guy besmirched my lord's honor. Let's go trash his house. Except on a grand enough scale, trashing his house requires like building a trebuchet. Like at a certain point, it's like that house has got a really like huge fence around it, and it's like guarded. So now we have to like siege his house. Anyway,
you had the shit with you that time, or
no? I had had armies. With
okay,
me.
And, did they have shit with them?
Yeah, but their shit was like swords.
Okay,
bad shit.
So that battle, like, it's pretty like decently scaled, cool. And you're taking part in it. And there are cool little touches, like if you're wearing a big knight's helmet, you can't see anything.
And then is it Mountain Blade style, where you're like sword to the side and like hit?
Yeah, okay. Very much so. So there's a little like a fighting game element to it. To me, it felt a little loose, honestly. But that might also be because my character was a soft boy and like maybe didn't feel as snappy as he should have.
Friendly Truffle in the chat says the Hungarian king while being thrown in prison. So much for the tolerant left. Extremely good.
Well,
what else did we see? Is that your takeaway? Basically,
that sounds pretty cool.
Looks
really cool.
Pretty cool. The only thing I'll say is like. if you're expecting, like, there's, like, Witcher-ness to it, but if you're expecting, like, Witcher 3 quality...
Right. The game started originally crowdfunded.
Yes.
And it's been developed for a couple years since. I think a publisher got involved at some point, but...
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds... Yeah. What else did people see?
You have the list.
I started playing our video. I went to go get a beer and to pee, and I was like, I'm not going to lose any of that conversation. I'm going to open up an app and watch what they say. And I spoiled that by opening it, and it was playing still. We hit swords on things with Ashen. Which we looked at.
So we talked about it a couple days ago, yes. Which we had the Microsoft Showcase.
I saw Justin McElroy in the Showcase look at a wall with holes in it for about 12 minutes and not know what to do with those wall holes.
Yeah, and I sat down and played that demo, got to a boss. It was unclear to me if... So there were two demo stations next to each other.
So Ashen was also in the Microsoft trailer, right?
Yes, it was at the press conference. You know, reductive indie souls, but like, you know... saw that demo and then was heard through the wind that, like, hey, maybe there's more to this game. You should sit down and actually do a guided demo. Right. So I went and did one this morning. You did this one this afternoon.
Yes.
Then I gave you a couple of questions you should ask about that game that I thought were...
What were your questions for me again? You were asked about the NPCs.
Ask about the NPCs, yeah. And then ask about how multiplayer works.
Okay, yes. So let's talk about this.
So if you haven't listened to the earlier stuff, yes. Like... Ashen's game coming from Annapurna Interactive. Is that their second?
They are publishing it, yeah.
Right. They just published What Remains of Edith Finch. They're a publisher that is, you know, has some veterans from, like, Sony Santa Monica, folks that worked on Journey, and a bunch of stuff. Like, there's a certain aesthetic, a certain design approach that they're bringing to Annapurna. Ashen, I mean, really, to be reductive, is indie Souls. Like, it's called Ashen. In Dark Souls, you're called the Ashen One.
Yes. I may have fed, like, teeth to a giant mermaid god, which is, like, an extremely Dark Souls thing to do.
Well, yeah, you see a woman and you deliver a weird item and she scatters the teeth to the water.
The darkness of the
water. And then an enormous creature appears. Which, actually, Dark Souls doesn't do stuff like that.
No, in fact, I actually had a good conversation with them about that where they were like, we wanted to make sure that it was so clear that, like, there are creatures in this world so big that a sword would never hurt them.
Yes.
Like, you are not...
This is not going to be a boss that you're going to fight. Nope. This is a mermaid that would crush you.
Right.
If you wanted to get involved.
That, like, maybe a tree is in there, or, like, there's something, a thorn in their side that you could pull out and help them, or hurt them if they're already...
If you were from a distance with, like, an enormous, you know, like
arbalest
fantasy bow and arrow.
Right, exactly. What is that noise?
Probably food.
Anyway.
So, there were two things that when I got the guy to demo. One, I realized that how multiplayer works, which is that they are designing this game from the ground up to be played
cooperatively. Yeah. Unlike Dark Souls. Well,
Dark Souls, a lot of people do play it cooperatively, but it's an option.
Right.
And specifically, there is a dungeon you can enter, the main part of this demo, in which two players have to walk up to it, put their fists inside of it,
right.
And then the doors open.
I want to be clear, I wasn't dragging Justin about staring at that thing. The point was, that demo the other day... Did not explain that. It was not clear that people were in the same world. They were working cooperatively.
You weren't sure if it was AI, or you weren't sure if it was the equivalent of, like, a phantom in Dark Souls, where it's like, this is someone around here. Exactly. Like, I don't know if I'm supposed to participate.
But this guy to them that we got today, the guy was right there playing with us, and he was like, all right, you go up and you bolt,
yep.
Put your hands in this door, you open it. And the thing that I didn't realize until halfway through is he wasn't playing his character.
No.
He was playing the treasure hunter.
Yes.
Which is one of the NPCs who will live in your town that you're slowly building over the course of this game.
And when you co-op with people, you are playing an NPC in their world.
Right.
So when you are the main character and the other person is the treasure hunter, like, they are the main character and you are the treasure hunter.
Right.
And so every co-op experience you have is you helping someone that then becomes a part of their, like, hub world.
Yes.
And so whereas in Dark Souls you just come across NPCs, like, this game, you participate with the NPCs, and then they become part of your hub, but that experience in learning who they are, having experience in the world with them,
is with
a player.
So, like, which is really cool, because for me, I'll remember that, like, my treasure hunter I met while going after these teeth in this place that, like, defended the mermaid, and that, like, helped me with that boss fight. There was a bit where I was really hurt, and he held off this weird, like, shadow monster while I was healing. And, like, that's my treasure hunter. I'll have that experience. And that's every NPC except for like two or three NPCs in the whole.
And then on top of that, one of the things the game does, and we touched on this earlier this week, was that when you use like a health item, rather than just filling up your health, it fills up your health a little bit and then slowly fills further, but that also reduces your stamina. So it's like a risk reward in terms of like, do you really need that health? Because you're going to lose the ability to swing. But building on top of that, they told me about there are items in the game that, for example, will allow you to go into those dungeons that you require two people with one person.
So I had this whole conversation with them.
So specifically what this is interesting is that in the Dark Souls community, who, as much as I love them, looks down on people who summon people who play the game cooperatively.
Right.
The idea is that you only play cooperatively after you've beaten a boss and you go back to help other people. And it's okay to help other people, but if you play the game solo, suddenly you have not played the game the proper way. You are not good enough at this game.
Yeah.
And the way Dark Souls operates, Dark Souls doesn't judge you for it.
No, Dark Souls encourages it.
But the community judges for you. Yes. But like the way it handles its difficulty scaling is that there is a normal operating difficulty, and then you choose to make it easier.
Yeah.
What Ashen does, which I think is smarter, is that there's a normal operating difficulty, and then you choose to make it harder.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And the thing that's amazing,
it's the same way as like in like Bungie games when how they name their difficulty like levels.
Legendary versus
legendary, heroic. Like a heroic. Mm-hmm. That is different than like easy.
Yeah.
And like easy is a pejorative to a lot of people, even if they want to play a game.
Exactly.
And like it shouldn't be. It should
also me.
Should not be a pejorative. And like so when I was like talking to one of the designers, like I was like, I'm not sure how much you guys have thought about that or like what the implications are, but I think it's really, really fascinating how that's perceived by players.
Here's two implications that are really cool. One is it's random which NPCs you'll get in which order. It does not, it's not a thing where it's like, okay, the first dungeon you get the treasure hunter, the second dungeon you get the bartender, the third you get
things like the blacksmith are not included in that. Right, like, totally. Blacksmiths like upgrade your weapons, your armor, like those people are just in the world.
Right. So key people, like, and there's like two or three they say. Mm-hmm. But then you'll go to your second or third dungeon and it'll be the bartender or it'll be the person who gives you like new like dye jobs or whatever on the that's the thing I'm making up.
Right.
But like some other NPC in the world. The person who understands magic and lore, like who knows what.
Yeah.
And then one, that means that you and I will get different characters in different order. And the city builds as you bring people back to it, or the town, and then as you do quests for them, the town continues to build. And they talked about a situation where like if your tower, if your like home gets to be like two floors high or three floors high, and then a certain other NPCs also does, they'll build a bridge between the two in the town at the point at which that happens, which sounds really cool. Didn't see it, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is like if you play as the person who's like, no, I'm gonna do it solo, I'm gonna use the special ability that lets me like open up all these doors by myself, fuck everybody else, guess what? Your town is gonna be like dreary and empty and like depressing. And I love
it. Because it's oddly a game about friendship and cooperation. And if you choose to like push away those things, well, then
there's pushing it away.
There's like a rune that you can equip that gives you more damage if more people around you have more regular like human talent. And like, oh, that's dark. Like that's not. And I'm kind
that
of into
rad.
It. And I'm glad that I got this second demo because seeing it the other day at the Microsoft Showcase. On the floor, I was like, this does not look
good. Well, I started it being immediately reductive, which is like, well, it's just Indie Souls, which is fine. Like, that's, you got me. Like, I'm listening.
Yes.
But then the demo being poor was like, ugh, well, okay, maybe this is not the thing.
And also, it's like, it's really cool aesthetic stuff. Like, very muted colors, no faces on any of the characters. Like, sometimes, like, there would be a mustache or hair, but like, not, no eyes, no mouth.
Yep.
Very striking looking game.
Just something to pay attention to.
2018.
Yep.
I also saw Artful Escape while I was at
Anna Karina. My god, that game.
Here's the pitch that I was given. I'm just going to repeat it because I don't like doing it. I don't like repeating just the
Also, because if you were to tell me, explain that game, I would have a very difficult time doing
it. The pitch was, what if before he could make Ziggy Stardust, David Bowie had to go on a trans-dimensional journey to understand what like being a rock star was?
That's a lot better than what I ever would have come up with.
That's what the pitch was of the development.
It's also accurate.
Yeah, it's a platformer where you walk through really beautiful spaces. And it's not even a platformer.
Because you're not actually, like, you jump, but it's not even a rhythm game.
No, it's not a rhythm runner. Someone in the chest is a rhythm runner.
Like, for example, like when you, you can double jump.
Yeah.
But then you can triple jump, sort of. But the triple jump is you hit A, and then the third A you have to tap on. And that's when you, I think the game uses, what's the term? Not jam, it's,
shred.
Shred.
Shred your
guitar. And your guitar comes out, and you shred on the guitar, and it allows you to float down onto the next platform.
Wow! And it matches up with whatever the song in the background is.
And that's one of the things that is hard to convey. I don't know how much it comes across in the trailer, but in playing, the environment, the music, your actions, like, and you can play your guitar at any time and start fucking around and like playing like the predetermined like chords. It always sounds like it's a part of the music and the environment.
And apparently you're going to make your character based on, like, what planet are they from? Your kind of persona. And I had a talk with the developer afterwards who was basically saying, like, I got out of school. I went to game development school and then immediately got signed as a musician and toured for a few years.
Weird.
And hated it. I hated it.
It was not the magical...
No, it was not magical. It was not going on a trans-dimensional journey about figuring out what being a rock star was. And what he said was, like, he wanted to make a game that was more about the promise of being a rock star and the kind of... That said...
When we think of Prince and David Bowie.
David Bowie, exactly. And said specifically that those elements of presentation are just as much a part of their artistry as the guitar playing, as the songwriting. That part of the appeal of those things is the narrative that they tell the world about themselves as characters. And, like, yeah, that's cool. I'm into that.
It's also...
I don't want to get too deep into it because the demo is super short, and who knows.
But it is gorgeous. Very one nice. Of the prettiest things I saw this week, and so curious to see more. That totally. Also felt like a lot like a Double Fine game. If I could, like, convey, like, a tone and aesthetic.
Rob, can you tell me about the ice again?
I'm gonna actually step off the stream for a minute.
Sounds good. Don't go in the red door.
I'm not going in the red door?
Has that door been opened since we...
Shelby, don't talk about
it. There are doors in this house that you don't open.
Shh. Not allowed to talk about it.
Oh, three times, then it's...
Then, yeah. She said it was twice.
What's up with Frozen, the movie?
Frostpunk! Danica left at the right time. Patrick, you're stuck with us. Let's talk about a city builder. I'm gonna build that fucking snow city.
It's a little bit like... Sim Snowpiercer, except you're not on a train. It's like the locomotive is just like jammed into the snow.
It is.
It's become like the obelisk that you'll have to worship.
Is this
War
Is Mine developer?
War Is Mine developers have moved on to make this game called Frostpunk.
What was the first one?
Frozen. Frozen Punk. Frozen Frozone. Frozone. That's amazing. Is that the guy from
The Incredibles?
Yep. Also a movie with a weird political read. If you dig into it
a little bit.
Wait,
stop.
The Incredibles?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Frostpunk. It's a city builder, which I did not expect at all. Here's what I mean. I'm going to tell you what I expected. Frostpunk from the This War Is Mine developers. What I expected was, This War Is Mine, but everyone's cold. War of Mine, but everyone's cold.
Here's another place where people are miserable.
Right. Well, hey, but also slow down. That's still there.
But also, it's like punk. And so it's
they would have boots with
spikes
on them.
You've been out there in the ice, haven't you? Yeah, fuck you, Dad. Yes,
yeah, that's what I expected. But I expected the kind of the 2D, like, diorama cutaway view interiors. And it would be like, I'm sending out Jessica to go.
It's the same gameplay, rough aesthetic, but just set in a different
world.
Premise. Yeah,
and also the focus on individual characters, a small group of survivors trying to make it out there on the ice and the
snow. Was that game actually good?
I never played it. I really wanted to.
This War Is Mine.
Yeah,
This War Is Mine. Okay,
the same thing I did.
Like,
it was War of Mine.
Yeah,
well, they're both true. My name is my name.
My name is my name.
War Is Mine.
No, This War Of Mine was good. It was cool. It's depressing as hell. Problematic the more you thought about it,
right.
Is the way I would put it.
But they seem to have like the right intention. Everything I read about it, where people were like, it was like they were trying to do something interesting and thought provoking about like survivors and like war situations and
That's not what Frostpunk is. Frostpunk is an isometric game, right? It's a city builder, and it's not focused on individuals.
Focused on the city. It's like, so basically, it's the 19th century.
All right.
But in this version of the 19th century, the Industrial Revolution, Earth is like overtaken by some sort of like climate apocalypse and an ice age comes in.
Okay.
And it pretty much wipes out everybody, except that before like everything was destroyed, there was some sort of like super generator that was created that is surviving this apocalypse. And everyone has to gather around it because it's the only source of like heat and power in this universe. and you build your city in the shadow of this thing, in the radius of this thing.
Where it looks like, Patrick, it looks like one of the things at the end, towards the end of Nier, the big tower things.
Oh, okay. There's, all
right. I remember there was, they might even call generators.
I don't know.
It looks just like one of those, big cylinder in the ground.
Nier feels like 18 months ago.
Dude, it's been a long week.
Where this gets really, really nifty, though, is one, like, it gets colder at times. So, like, there's points where the environment just becomes much more hostile. The other issue you're dealing with is that your workers go out into spaces where they are at risk of exposure. And, like, there isn't much food in
the spot. Like, constantly a thing that's like, this is the temperature right now. And you can tell when a temperature drop is on its way. You better prepare. Bad news.
Better crank up that generator.
Right. And burn some coal.
I do that at home. I turn up the temperature.
Yeah. Right. Just imagine. And so the thing that they ended up doing.
Oh, no.
So if this War of Mine was about interpersonal conflict, individual need, this is a societal conflict.
Like a much more like a meta layer.
Right. So like one of the first things.
Macro level, right.
Exactly. You start off by one of the things that happens early on is like, you have to make a law. Pick a law for your society.
A law?
Oh.
So things like.
Informs a bunch of other things?
So things like. Yeah, the child labor, yes. But safe child labor only for now.
Oh.
Or like, we'll keep people alive if they're really hurt. That's a law that we'll put into place.
That's a weird
law.
But
then that's another mouth to feed.
What did you pick?
But then that's another mouth
to feed. Did you play? Did you pick a law?
I watched somebody play.
Yeah,
I
also
what did they pick?
They were pretty much, I would say, neutral good. Maybe.
That's more, I bet you they did the same basic demo.
Yeah, so child labor, yeah. But send them to safe places. Like, so kids can pick through the refuse to burn.
Right. Get some wood for us to burn. Right. Build stuff with.
So but not mines.
But not working. Well, picking through probably not the actual mines.
Just picking through the stuff that comes from the mines.
Right. Bring me that coal.
Yeah.
But you're not going to go down there with your hands.
Okay. All right.
So that's one thing you can do. Another thing is, like, labor is a limited resource here. Like, people can only work so many resource patches at a time. And yet, as your settlement grows, you're going to need to consume more energy to sort of sustain the generator and sustain the heat. So after a certain point, there might be more work to do than you have hands for.
Right. And there's this moment where they're like, yeah, we're going to turn on child labor. And he went back to the work screen. I was like, oh, you got a lot of extra workers.
A lot. Like, strong argument.
Uncomfortable now.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Speaking of uncomfortable... So he.
We've had a lot of that.
He activated. There was a health policy thing. So basically, it was a choice between ACA and Trump Care in some ways.
Tell me.
Okay. It was like, on the one hand, you can treat people and like get them better and they won't die. And, you know, that's kind of like you take care of your workers. The other option is, you know, a sick worker. Really, what good are they? And in this world, there actually is no cushion. That's the thing. Is like every single person has to be generating something for
right, their community. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So he activated radical medical care.
Oh, shit.
Which
I
is
didn't
like,
see this.
Oh, yeah. So basically, there's a couple ways you can deal with
RMC.
Some of these
that's the next step.
Next, yeah.
You can
AKA doesn't work out. RMC's up next.
Oh, no.
You can do the safe treatment, which will keep someone from dying, but might leave them like on the disabled list. Or you can do the radical treatment, which probably will kill them.
Uh-huh.
But if it doesn't, then they're back to being a fully productive worker for your society. Now, where the tension gets introduced is the bottom of the screen. There's two bars.
Okay.
There's hope and discontent. And the way it points out is your people need hope. Like, they need to believe that this society isn't all there's going to be.
Like, there's not really a plot, but, like, is there any sort of, like...
Yeah, there is a plot, actually.
Is it, like, this is going to pass? Like
no,
the Earth is going to...
We need to figure out how to survive despite
this.
And the plot is basically you stumble onto this place and you have left behind half of your expedition.
Okay.
They're out there in the wild somewhere. We need to get them back in.
But it's not about, like, let's heat up the planet. Let's go to the beach.
No. And in fact, like, I mean, the arc based on the screenshots that they showed at the later game is, like... build a really functional society in this crater in the snow. Ugh. That's like gross until like right, it's like yeah. this big steampunk
also,
city.
It looks so good. Like
it looks so good.
The snow recedes as the yeah. heat comes up on your society. The workers tracking through the snow like will wear deeper and deeper tracks into the snow, so like you can tell what's like been a heavily worked
recently. I wish I liked City Builders, but
you'll like this one. I promise. No, just give it a chance.
Okay,
it's,
all
it's
right.
It's the Dark Souls of City Builders.
It's, well, yeah. okay then. If you just well, say that for every no, genre, that I'm like, that. I'm not, in, I'm not into those games. What would that
game.
Even be?
Well, like I would want to build. Okay, what it would be is yes. the dark. Okay, the Dark Souls of City Builders would have like a fast forward button where
this
you don't.
This get, got it.
No, sorry. It's only you know, most city builders have a fast forward.
Button. Yeah, I'm aware of that.
I'm gonna go 2x speed or 8x speed.
Yeah,
I think it's not a fast forward button where you get to decide how fast it is. It just jumps you some amount of time into the future after your society.
The
like, all right, it's over. Your society's going to go that's forward amazing. From here, and you come back to it, and it's just like it's ruins, and you get to pick through the ruins.
So you can we, like, can we delete this from the archive and then like fucking actually make that game?
I guess Dwarf Fortress sort of already is this.
So
game,
you can
but,
be like, oh shit, that's actually a great idea. So no, it's like no. you're the mayor of Detroit, 1943. Mm-hmm. Congratulations!
Uh-huh.
What an amazing city you built. It's Jump. The American city of the century.
And then there's androids Ooh. Everywhere yeah. in the future.
And, it's, Cage, and then it's like anarchy. It's
violence
or passive.
Yeah,
no, what happens
anyway?
So you have to maintain a certain level of hope. So people need to believe that like
okay.
society's yep. not yep. always yep. going to be this hand to mouth precarious existence. You also have to deal with discontent, and
right.
so each time you're sort of like, you know. Imposing harsher circumstances on your people, discontent goes up.
Right,
that's going to blow up in your face.
And it's not just that you're doing this from time to time. I mean, it partially is. There's a bar that fills that lets you decide a new law.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also moments where they'll say, yo, I broke my leg in the factory today. We have got to get a better healthcare system. And you can say, all right, radical treatment? Bad. The thing that he said before. Mm-hmm. Bad. Okay, yeah, you know, we're going to take care of our people. Or I'm not going to deal with this right now. Now, the other thing that happens from that sometimes is, it's not just, I want to put this law into place. It's, hey, it's going to get cold soon. We can't be this cold. And they'll make a demand. And they'll say, we want to have shelters. And there you can say, like, yes, or not right now. And saying yes doesn't give them shelters. Saying yes makes the promise that you will give them shelters. And that raises hope a little bit, because you've given them a promise.
But you still have to deliver on the
and
promise.
And if you don't, then you get a bigger
So it actually like introduces politics into
yes.
the equation, which like, and politics is different than policy.
Politics is different than policy. That's not a Wire quote, but it sounds like it could be.
My name is my name.
Yeah, my name is my name.
Politics is different than policy.
Bullshit.
That's yeah. interesting, though. That's,
yes. And I want to see if that's I want to see how developed that gets. I want this game to have political factions. There was a screenshot that has like buttons that are like or like tabs and the kind of technologies you can build that include things like order, leisure, and faith, or technology and faith, something
right,
like that.
Right.
And like I want to see how different Rob's city
yeah.
can be than mine, because I played a lot of city builders and
sometimes they funnel
and that can be fun too, because it can be fun to funnel. It can be fun to funnel, y'all. It can be fun to kind of, like, work the paces and, like, figure out...
Right.
Oh, this isn't the most efficient city that works this
but
way.
But you still sort of end up the same
a similar,
place,
at least.
Right?
Like, I put a
You have your own story along the way, but...
Totally. But
the
end
city
of it,
is
by
a city. The city is a city.
My name is my name. And I want there to be a feeling that Rob's city could be functionally different than mine. Not only because we make different choices, but because different elements put different pressure on us.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah.
That's 2018? No, that's
later this year.
That's
like
late
this year.
Right. Actually, I talked to him. He was like, really want to think about late this fall. If it slips, it slips. Like, so it's one of those ones. I'm like, yeah, give yourself the time. Like, I would love it to be out for...
What if it came out next year because too many games?
Yeah, what if that? That sounds okay.
It still feels like there are too many, like...
There are too... I mean, like, the next 2 months, not too much coming out, but then it feels
then
like we hit, like, end of August.
We
and
hit it
just,
again.
There are, like, three, like, 40-hour games that come out on, like, October... like, the same day and
Shut up.
The same day as Mario Odyssey, I think Assassin's Creed Origins, and then there's a third game that comes out that day. I was not
getting tired thinking about it.
Yep.
I also played Moonlighter at 11-bit. 11-bit is publishing Frostpunk.
Yep.
I'm not sure if that's a developer or a publisher, actually. I actually don't know if 11-bit is the dev or the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But
I thought they were a publisher.
Okay. So I also saw Moonlighter, which is... like a 2D Zelda top-down thing.
The New Colossus. That's the third game.
That's the third game.
That's too many games.
Too many games.
Delay some shit.
I'll see that tomorrow.
Don't delay Mario, but
delay
some other games.
Yeah. Don't delay any of delay.
Maybe delay Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed. So I also saw Moonlighter, which is a game that's like, it's a top-down Zelda-y cartoonish game. Really nice art, decent music. You explore procedurally generated dungeons. I've done this pitch for a different game.
I was just saying, like, it's all starting to blur together.
I know. This Swords of Ditto was sort of similar. Mm-hmm. Swords of Ditto thing was, it was generational.
Yeah,
gimmick on this one is that it is about a shop. You're running a shop. So you go into the, you're a shop owner who decides they want to become an adventurer, but to become an adventurer, it's expensive, so you got to make some money by running a shop.
Right.
And so you go in and, like, try to get some equipment to sell, or materials, like, I found these crystals, I could power up my sword with these crystals, or I could sell them. And then you bring them back and put them up for sale, and then you don't know how much they're worth by default. So you're like, I guess it's worth, 100? I don't know. And then there's this good system where, the characters who come in, we get different, emoticons above their heads, basically, where, there's one where they're like, yo, you under-fucking-sold this shit. Yeah, $100 for these crystals, dog.
Got
shit,
it.
Peace. Got it. Exactly. And then the other side was like, no, fuck this. I'm out of here. This is too expensive. And there's two middle grounds that are like, oh, okay, yeah. And I'll pay it, but I'm not happy about it. And there's a whole popularity system with, how often you're overselling things, if there's too much supply for a thing. And then there's this whole second thing, which is just that the dungeons are hard. And it costs... Once you're in, you're locked in. And you have to spend money to teleport out, either with, it's 300 gold to teleport out regularly, and if you do that, it changes the dungeon, Rogue Legacy style. Or you spend 1,000 gold, and it will lock the dungeon in place, and you'll be able to get out and sell stuff. And so there's just a lot of, risk-reward, trying to figure out, did I get in a haul here to, make it worth hitting that $1,000 thing, 1,000 coin thing, to get out, get healed up, or whatever. Maybe I'll spend 1,000 in front of the boss door. That way, I'm ready to go.
Right.
Or you spend the 300 and do the whole run again, and maybe make some extra money next time. Or don't spend any money. Maybe you got it. Maybe you can take the boss with only 2 health potions. And that was cool. So I like seeing these stuff at E3. It's a thing I like a lot of small games being shown at E3, even if it's in some back weird room. I want to make sure we give those games the time too, because it's so easy to just be like, well, I have to see Assassin's Creed Origins.
Right.
Stuff. Anything else, or is that? Did we do it?
That,
Beyond Good and Evil 2, The Last Night.
Yep.
Cat in the Hijab.
Yep.
Ashen. Artful Escape.
Yep.
Frostpunk.
Yep.
Moonlighter. Kingdom Come.
Yep.
Two more. Tell me, Patrick, tell me about the mouse.
Oh.
Tell me about Peter Quill.
Star-Lord.
Quill is the name of the mouse. Right? It's Quill?
Yes, the name is
Quill. The actual mouse is Quill.
Yeah, it's it was the VR during the VR lineup at Sony's media conference.
Quill,
yeah, it's right here. Yeah, this is Quill.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
did you break Quill?
I don't think I did.
Oh my god!
No, it goes
Patrick.
On.
Patrick.
Danica's gonna be so upset.
Danica, you broke her baby. Oh.
He's just taking a nap.
No, give me that. I'm gonna fix it.
It's not. It just snaps in.
Give it to me.
I'm just afraid.
Just, you don't touch it.
Okay,
all
right.
Tell me about this beautiful mouse.
Mouses and moss. Yeah, it was shown.
You should force it. I will force it. Don't worry. Keep talking.
It was shown during Sony's media account.
Fixed.
Okay.
Keep talking. Keep talking. Tell me about Quill. Take those off. I'm not even going to look at you.
Take that thing off. So at the conference, I think people were confused over the actual control scheme.
It's a VR game.
It's a VR game.
You don't play a little mouse. You play, well.
Wow. So yeah. So when you actually watch the trailer, it kind of seems like there's a cursor going across the screen. And you're interacting with things in the environment, which that's common for VR games, or maybe you're just interacting with things around you, but not actually directly controlling a character.
Right.
And they seem to acknowledge that maybe their trailer had been confusing and mostly sold an aesthetic as opposed to actually what's happening in the gameplay. So you are controlling the mouse.
Quill. I said Peter Quill.
It's fine. Okay. So you are controlling Quill with the analog stick, and he can jump, and he can pull out a sword.
So what was that big weird thing that looked like it was from?
You're that, too. The VR, the VR screen is that character. So you're playing two characters at once. So you are controlling Quill. Yes, but not nearly as confusing.
Okay.
So you're controlling Quill with the left analog stick. You can jump. You can You can, you know, pull out a sword, but then the dual analog stick, and I don't, I presume also the, you know, the PlayStation Move, if you wanted to use that. I wasn't completely sure on that. But like, so there are things in the environment, and so like when you see that, like that blue orb that was going around the trailer, that is you moving the controller.
Oh.
And the controller can interact with certain things in the environment. Cool. And then you have to hold down L2 and R2 and
like
physically move the object. So you might see like a, you know, a stone that like you have to move out of the way. So you have to go, you have to lean in with yourself, with the VR set, pick it up, move it out of the way, and then you can move Quill with the analog stick to let him jump over it.
That makes sense, because there were certain feedback in the trailer that was like, Quill was swinging and hitting an enemy, and the enemy flashed white. And I was like,
"Yep,
that's only for if you're playing and hitting a thing.
Yes.
You get feedback
yes.
that you hit it." So
yeah, and so you have these cool moments where you're moving Quill around, and then you are interacting with like it works a lot in perspective. So it's like you'll have like this spire, and it's, you know, it's in the wrong direction. So you're like moving the spire so like Quill can get on one side, and moving the spire so Quill can get on the other side. And one of the things they were talking about was that the game was built from the ground up for VR because the lead art director and one of the main designers worked at Bungie for like 7 years.
Oh, wow.
They worked on like ODST, Reach, most of Destiny. The art director worked through Taken King and then wasn't fed up with Bungie, just thought VR was interesting. It was like, I wanted to learn how to make games in VR. And like the way they started was, okay, let's play a bunch of these VR prototypes. Let's like see what works. And what they found worked was like small scale environments in which you can get very close and in detail.
Sure.
Not like a large 3D environment in which you're running around with dual analog sticks and like looking and moving, or you're pointing at somewhere and transporting. It's like a diorama. It's like something small, highly detailed,
right
in front of you, in which like there is enjoyment in putting your head forward. There is enjoyment in moving the controller around, and everything in the environment reacts. If you put your controller in the water like reacts to that. If you put your head into like the leaves like brush around.
Cool.
And so like there's a lot of details like that. And once they found out the perspective and scale, they realized we can't have a tall character, so we need a small character. And so, like, what kind of small characters can we have? And one of the first suggestions was this little mouse. And, like, that just stuck. It's like a little mouse in this, like, small environment. But then you as this sort of,
that's
like,
cool
kind of, like, spirited away-looking character. And you are in the game opens with you are called a reader. And you're in a library. You open a book. And then as this sort of, like, spiritual godlike character, like when you open the book you participate in the story, and but the Quill, the mouse, he's never been you've never been part of his story before. Like, this book exists,
that's really cool,
but like this is the first time that you have
really
existed
cool.
with Quill, and he's scared, like this, he's never seen this
man.
Giant creature appear in front of them.
What is this?
And one of the things they said was that VR is extremely good at heightening emotions. So horror games work very good in VR because you are confronted with a screen in front of you.
Yeah.
You are not. It is difficult to like grab someone's hand. It's difficult to look away from a screen. And the hope of VR, one of the hopes of VR, is that if there is a spectrum of emotions that can be heightened by a screen in front of you, maybe that's also empathy.
Right.
And so one of the things they're working on is that Quill as a character, when he is scared, when he is excited, he looks at you.
Right.
And it is different to be on a flat screen and have a character look at you.
Well, that already just like never happens that.
Because it doesn't make any sense, because where is the character looking?
Right, exactly.
But when the character reacts, the animation reacts to you looking at Quill. So if Quill is scared and you're looking at Quill, Quill will then look at you and like explain that he's scared.
If this mouse fucking dies,
I'm gonna
at the
fucking
end of this game.
Leave. I'm quitting Waypoint if that mouse dies.
And I don't think so. Like they talk about the relationship between you and the mouse is that you're making him you're giving him courage, and then also he's encouraging you to do certain things, right? Like, so like you're saying like you shouldn't go across that bridge, but then he's saying like, yo, let's go across that bridge. And like there's a relationship.
Exact choices.
And one of the things was at the end, the demo ends, I think it was actually in the trailer, like there's like a snake that appears at some point, like a really big snake.
Yes, I remember.
And they're going for like a Jim Henson, Dark Crystal, Secret of NIMH, sort of like 80s kids movies where it's friendly, it's exciting, but also like when it gets scary, like it gets scary. And when I laugh because this is the note I'll leave it on, it was like when I saw the giant snake, I said, I hope there aren't spiders. So, like, I'm not arachnophobic, but like fuck spiders. Yeah, like not like fuck spiders, like I realize they're important to the environment.
Oh, okay.
Not,
I thought you meant the other way too, like
no. I'm just saying like I don't want to smash a
Wow.
I don't want to crush a spider underneath my foot because...
I'm not judging you about whatever you're into. That's totally fine.
Don't
I'm not king
shame spider
you.
Shame me.
Yeah, like you want to crush something on your foot, you
I don't
it.
Want to. I'm just... Anyway, they have one of the main people on the team is actually arachnophobic, and they said they tried to put, like, spider webs in the game, and they said it was too weird in there for VR, so they said no spiders confirmed. And I was
good.
Like, great. Yes. Great. Other but, weird creatures, but no spiders.
I'm already living in this reality where I'm just, like, in my VR helmet and just being like... Get up, Quill. Get up. No. Like, I can't handle this. No. Like, this is like...
No.
It's extremely cute, extremely charming, and was a... When I played a little bit of Star Child, which is also a game shown at the PlayStation conference, which was all it was shown was, like, it's a big robot, and it's a 2D, you know, a side-scrolling game. We played that Tiny Tracks game, and I played Moss. And one of my takeaways was that giant 3D spaces can work in VR. It's fine. Mm-hmm. That's one approach. But also, tiny,
little intricate.
Intricate controlled spaces in which the character moves from left to right, and the designers have more authorship over what you're seeing, but that you are controlling that with a controller, but then you can also like zoom in and look around. That's a different approach, and also I find to be very interesting. So
that sounds really good. Note from the chat, Quill is a lady mouse.
Oh.
Like that hit Lil Wayne song, Lady Mouse.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, of course. We got one more, and we're going to end it.
Yep.
Dave Lang's Iron Galaxy.
Extinction.
Big troll killing?
Big troll killing. We actually watched a trailer for that last night.
I thought it would be a completely different thing.
Your original pitch, do you want to explain your original pitch on it? Your sarcastic pitch to the Annika?
What was my sarcastic? Oh, like, it was. What if someone who had never seen anime had to make an Attack on Titan game?
Yep. And then we watched the gameplay trailer.
It was like,
and actually looks kind of interesting.
It looks
alright. So yeah, it's one of Iron Galaxy's first like original games. Like they have previously. I mean, is Wrecketeer an original game? Like, I mean, like creatively original.
Wow.
Or, like,
Boombox, you mean?
Yeah, Boombox.
Boombox.
But like
Divekick. Divekick was sort of original.
Yeah. But it was an adaptation of like a Flash game, right?
Oh, right. True.
So
what else?
Creativity is a spectrum.
Killer Instinct season 2.
Mm-hmm.
What's Dave Lang? When was the last time Dave Lang was creative?
We might have to ask him that this week.
And you know what? It was a creative choice to wear that jacket we saw him wearing.
We did. It was a good jacket.
It was a good jacket.
Didn't fit him because, like, you're not that professional.
He's a big dude. He's a tall dude.
He's a big dude. We know.
Other creative choices.
To not show up for my appointment.
That was very creative.
Big time.
Big time, dude.
He did send me, like, a...
Tell me about Extinction. What did he send? Oh, also... I'd forgotten I'd done this, but when I scheduled this meeting for you, I didn't...
Let's go over the arc of this, which is that we got...
We're going to go way back for the whole arc.
A couple weeks. So we get
We have to go all the way back.
What do you mean?
You just joined Waypoint.
Yes.
And they had announced...
Oh, yes. They'd announced that Adam Boys was going to join Iron Galaxy.
Yes.
And I got an email that said, hey, would you like to interview Adam and Dave, like... About
it was
the
somebody
fact
else
that,
too, because there was a third person
who
I'm not who
became like a CEO.
Yeah, she was very important. She took over very important.
But it was like, hey, we're a trio. We're starting new original development. Like, would you like to interview the three of them? And I was like, no, because I know Adam and I know Dave. Like, I don't actually know if I could successfully interview them.
Right.
Like, I was just like, I just
who's
know
that for? Like,
yeah,
what's that?
Like if I'm going to do that interview, my audience would be like, hey, joke around. It's like I pass. Like I'm okay, and then. Like, I heard through the grapevine, like, Dave was sad. Like, I didn't take that interview.
You said no to his interview.
I said no. And he was like, why didn't Patrick want to interview me?
There's been tension.
There was tension. So that, like, simmered in the background. That's, like, a year ago. And then we get this invite. It's like, hey, Iron Galaxy is showing, like, a mysterious new game at E3. And I, like, our schedule was filling up. And I was like, hey, like, it's Dave. Like, let's go see his game. Like, I have no idea what that is. But it'll be fun. You and I go, and it'll be fine. And then
we get a note.
And then we get a. Well, I texted him. I said, "Hey,
We were trying to figure out what this game was. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
We were impressed, Nick Fox. Yep. We were like, yo.
Just tell me what this game is.
We've heard rumors about this. Yep. We've heard rumors about that. What is it?
Yeah, and he like, you know, gave me a little like sense of what it was and then was like, but I'm not going to be there. I was like, what do you mean you're not going to be there? What do you not mean you're going to be there? And then so I let it simmer, but we'd already booked it. I like canceling appointments.
Not with someone who, we know him.
Well, not even that, but just like, that's mean for... I said I'd go see the game.
You're right.
People other than Dave Lang worked on that game.
Right, lots
nice
of people.
Nice people at Iron Galaxy, like great studio.
They love Attack on Titan and hate anime for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe those are my people.
Wow.
Maybe those are...
So anyway, we're in line to go see Sony.
And like,
I didn't know that Dave Lang wouldn't be there when I programmed this into our schedules. Yes. And so I just got a notification that said 3 p.m. Dave Lang's house. I'm like, what? Why do I have to be at Dave Lang's house? Don't go to Dave Lang's house. That's in Chicago, probably. You went to Sonic Station, not at Dave Lang's house.
I did, yeah, no, it's Concourse 304C.
Okay. How was it?
It looks cool.
It's a 3D action game?
Yeah.
Wave-based?
Like,
is it wave-based?
No. Well, so they have a campaign, which they're not showing yet, but also wave-based. But like the general sense, like you're trying to save the civilians in like an Attack on Titan-type town where like they're giant, in this case, it's orcs. Huge, like, city-filling orcs.
Yeah.
And they're coming in. So there is a wave-based mode, but the mode I was saying was not that. Okay. But you're dealing with one orc at a time and then like going to a different part of the map. Okay. And you are specifically working on, like, micro stuff, which is, like, civilians with, like, little enemies. And then the macro stuff is, like, these giant orcs. And when you find the orcs, like, depending on the orc that arrives, you are trying to take off different parts of their armor so you can take off different parts of their body. But you also have the choice to skip doing... Ultimately, they die if you chop off their head. And you can jump to... chopping off their head immediately, but that requires like certain gymnastics to like scale the body. Like the reason that you are taking off different parts of their body is just to make it easier, because like a person with no legs and no arms, it's easier to kill them in the head. But you can immediately just start scaling them on different parts, and just immediately go for the headshot, and then that allows you to, like, you know, let's say you're behind in objectives. It's like, okay, with this guy,
there objectives?
Yeah, like there are towers that you're trying
to
save.
Are you the only person fighting?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no co-op. There's no multiplayer. It's just you trying to save this city. Yeah. And, like, the chopping mechanics, I'm not sure what you would call that. Like, it looks cool. And, like, jumping around and the actual, like, mechanic. Like, I love game. Like, I'm a big platformer guy. So, like, climbing things, there is, like, a certain, not quite buying a commando, but, like, the ability to, like, swing from things. Like, I love swinging mechanics.
Oh, you can swing?
Yeah. Like, there's a ability to, like, kind of, like, latch onto stuff. Sure. And that swings you around. And, like, you can jump on one of the orcs' back and then hopefully, like, chop off its necklace and, like, cut off its head.
Right.
It seems interesting and promising as far as Dave Lang can take a thing like that. So, you know, we'll see.
I'm curious about it.
Yeah.
Was it with PC?
I think there's a console, but it's definitely a PC. Okay. I'm not super specific on the other stuff.
I think that's it. I think that's all the games that there were today.
No more E3, right? We go home?
No, I have more tomorrow. In fact, if you have questions about what we have tomorrow,
I have a lot of appointments tomorrow.
Yeah, I fucked you up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, what if
there's like an hour today where I was like, I should just leave and go to a bar, which I did do.
All right, I'm going to see tomorrow. First of all, right out the gate, production, you listen to this. I'm going to interview Reggie Fiamme.
Yeah, we're going to say his name for real this time.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Fiamme? No, I'm just saying we're saying some other things earlier.
We were. Phil. Nice, got you right.
Yep.
Yes, I've forgotten already. You're seeing Capcom stuff. I hope you see Monster Hunter.
Yes, they have a presentation that like is a deep walkthrough on Monster Hunter World, which I'm actually super excited to see now. Yes.
Me too. I'm not going to see it, but I want you to see it and tell me about it.
I'm going
to
see Life is Strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that. Rob, do you know what you are seeing? You're seeing a 3DS thing tomorrow.
Yes.
Metroid.
Oh, it's Metroid.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Another Samus.
We never
Return
about.
Of Samus.
Yeah.
Well, I honestly don't really know.
So,
I watched the trailer, but I want to see what happens with Rob.
I'm going to see Bethesda, which means I'm going to see New Colossus.
And Evil Within.
And Evil Within. You're right. I'm going to see Crackdown tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Agents of Mayhem yesterday. I'm really kind of curious how those two games like hang with each other. Because I could use...
I'm curious what your demo is. If it is just what I played...
Right.
There won't be much to say.
No.
But I'm hoping maybe you'll see some of the multiplayer...
Right.
Austin's going to get back here. Like, I brought down
All the buildings. There are no more left.
No more capitalism.
It's not even right in now. It's not even in the game anymore. I brought down all the buildings. That feature is gone. Like, there's no more game. Rob and Danica are going to Bandai Namco. We'll probably see Project Cars. You'll probably see the Ni No Kuni 2.
Yep.
Some other cool Ace Combat 7. Go see those planes.
I'm going to go see Battle Chasers.
Battle Chasers.
Which I'm very excited about.
Battle Chasers Night something? Night
War.
Night War? That game's cool. I saw that game during Judges.
It's from Darksiders folks. I like Darksiders a lot, and now they're working on like their closest thing to a JRPG.
Right. And I think you're seeing maybe Forza?
There's a mysterious Xbox game.
It probably is Forza. It's probably Forza. Rob saw Forza. What did you think of Forza?
It was Forza.
Right.
This is a genre where the law of diminishing returns is pretty firmly in effect. Okay. But if you can see Forza in one of the giant hydraulic power chairs with force feedback everything,
that's
you should avail yourself of that opportunity.
Did the interview go up?
I'm checking.
I'm gonna check. It's so important.
Hey, it did.
Hey.
Hey, Xbox head Phil Spencer talks Xbox One X and first party exclusives Waypoint at E3 2017. That's live now on our YouTube page. You can see all sorts of stuff on our YouTube page.
Watch me get owned.
You watch Patrick. Patrick gets fucking dragged. I don't know if it came through in the interview.
I haven't seen the completed one. Yes, screaming.
Screaming. When Phil Spencer stands up and just drags Patrick Klepek, just drags him.
I mean, yeah.
It was great.
It made me think I should think about my tweets more often.
Yeah, no, people are watching. You can also find on there, we talked about the Devolver's game. I don't know if the Sony one is up yet, but that'll be up in the next day or two. We also had a talk today about some
There's a lot of games that if you're curious what we thought.
Yes. Someone asked us about Rabbids. We talked about Rabbids versus Mario's or whatever.
But also State of Decay.
Yes.
Days Gone. Those happen on video. Those will be coming up soon.
YouTube.com/waypointvice. Otherwise, you can go to waypointvice.com and kind of find everything that we do there. I think it's going to do it for us for day 2/5, depending on...
We still gotta.
Fuck, you're right. Speaking of Dave Lang,
yeah,
I don't think he'll be there today.
No, tomorrow.
Patrick and I are gonna go across town. Patrick and I are gonna go in that other room.
And eat some food.
We eat some goddamn banh mi.
I know what banh mi is.
Do they have that in Chicago?
I mean, yes. I don't know if it's as good.
Yeah, you put relish and mustard, but no ketchup.
The deep dish banh mi.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know what? Side note. Speaking of that, when we were at the Sony, the hands-on thing,
yeah,
and there were little hot dogs. Yeah. And then I went to go get one, and then I grabbed one, and because I'm an asshole, I just put ketchup on it.
Why is that an asshole? I do that. What the fuck?
But I commented to him, and I was like, oh, if anyone from Chicago could see me. And then a guy next to us goes like, well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Wow.
But
God damn. Dragged again.
I know.
Dragged that clipping.
Got that with the ketchup.
We're going to John
Bomb
tonight. We're going to eat that banh mi. Then we're going to get into a plane.
Bomb me.
Bomb me. What did I say? Bomb me.
No, I exactly. Bomb me and then bomb me.
And then we're done. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Let's go.
Let's just do it. But I don't know what's happening.
He wants me to stand here.
Eunice is here. Oh, yeah. Say hi to Eunice, everybody. Say hi and bye to Eunice.
Bye.
Eunice is single-handedly responsible for a 72-hour launch.
Yeah, whatever we did on camera, pale the comparison to behind-the-scenes stuff.
For real, there would be no Waypoint without Eunice. And Eunice is our last day here at Waypoint. So, good luck, Eunice. We loved having you here. It was really great. Aww. Eunice is great.
Thanks, Austin.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's going to do it for us today.
See you tomorrow.
We will see you tomorrow with more stuff coming to you live at twitch.tv/waypoint. Peace.